Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host Adam, and with me is my co-host Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
Dude, I am so good right now. We are 4 days away from Gotham by Gaslight, and my excitement level is through the roof right now, man. How are you doing?
You're gonna keep counting down that thing until like the second. Like, you're gonna send me a message at like 12:01 a.m. the day it comes out. Like, it's here.
You know, and I rarely do that. I think there's a good possibility that I actually will stay up. But the thing is, I think sometimes like they don't wind up releasing till like 3 o'clock in the morning, even though technically I guess it's supposed to release at midnight on digital. So I don't know if I'm gonna stay up, but I am so excited. I'm definitely gonna watch it first thing in the morning if I can on Tuesday when it comes out. And well, by the time this episode comes out, it'll have been out for about a week. To the listeners, I'm very jealous of you right now because that probably means you've seen it. And right now on this episode, we're still 4 days away, but I'm so excited.
At the time that listeners are listening to this, he's probably talking my ear off about this movie for days now. So, there it is. one of those listeners that, will have listened or will have seen it by the time this podcast, is released is our special guest on the show today. It's a listener of ours and a regular contributor of DC Daily Drop, Travis Hines. Travis, how are you?
I'm great, guys. I'm really excited to be here, and a long-time listener, I'm excited to finally be on the pod.
Cool. We're excited to have you here, and since you're so experienced with doing it on DC Daily Drop, and specifically talking about the TV side of DC, we thought we'd bring you on to talk about a monumentous occasion in DC TV, and that's the premiere of Black Lightning. Before we get to Black Lightning, though, we have some news business to take care of.
Really the second episode in a row that we've got that's really jam-packed.
Well, yeah, like I said, we said that, you know, we were hoping at the in our last episode of 2017 that once this year kicked off that we'd get, you know, an influx of news, and that seems to be true. What's on the docket news wise today, Jordan?
Okay, well, I feel like we should split it up like we usually do into film and then TV news. So if you want to start with the film news, I guess I was probably going to start with we got a couple things that came out. The first thing would be that we got release dates for Suicide Squad Hell to Pay. And if I was a good co-host, I would have had those up because I said I would, but I forgot. So I am pulling those release dates up now. But it's actually, or what I do remember, I don't remember the exact dates until I pull them up. But what I will say is that last episode, we speculated when we got the trailer about when we were getting this movie.
I think we were pretty close, actually.
Yeah. We know it's the... we know it's the spring release, but it's actually even a little bit earlier than we predicted it would be, because of course Teen Titans the Judas Contract last year came out in April. This is actually coming out digital on March 27th of 2018, mm-hmm. and then physical April 10th 2018. So we were pretty close, but it's actually even a little bit earlier than we thought. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Travis wasn't here when we. Talked about it last time, the trailer. So let's give him a quick chance to... What were your general thoughts of the trailer, Travis?
I enjoyed it a lot. I found out immediately that they weren't going to go with the continuity from the Suicide Squad cast Assault on Arkham, because there's some characters in this that weren't there. Uh-huh. But I enjoyed Deadshot, too. You could tell that they're pushing him and Harley. But Amanda Waller caught my eye, and the way that she's going after books with this, I can't wait to see the backstory about that. So I'm interested. I'm going to have my copy immediately when it drops on digital.
Nice, nice. Good. So he's in agreement with us on his thoughts on the trailer. And,
oh yeah.
That's why we bring him on here, because he agreed with us. No, that's not but yeah, okay. So those are the dates. We're looking forward to it. And what else we got?
And then that's not the only release dates we got for a DC movie. Now let's move on to a live action DC movie that we have release dates for, which is the home media release of Justice League. So we've got it's coming out on digital on February 13th, 2018, mm-hmm. and on Blu-ray on March 13th, 2018. And we got a little, I guess I call it a teaser for the home media release, where we found out that there's going to be bonus scenes, including, well, this really appeals to me, because as much as I like Justice League, I mean, we talked about it in a review, perhaps my biggest criticism was the almost non-existent use of the Man of Steel theme, and it looks like we're going to be getting additional Superman scenes that also that it sounds like, based on that teaser, that are going to use the Man of Steel music, so that has me pumped. And we got our list of extras on this too, so I don't know if you want me to run down the extras.
Yeah, run
or not,
down the extras,
but...
why not? Yeah, run them down, let's see where they are.
Okay, all right, and this is coming from Batman on Film, so just to give credit where credit is due. Road to Justice. Journey alongside DC comic creators as they explore over 50 years of the Justice League, from comic books to animated adventures to their cinematic debut. That's the first one.
Okay.
Then next up, Heart of Justice. Discover the heart, soul, and mind of the Justice League as the cast and filmmakers share their admiration for DC's iconic trinity, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman. We've got Technology of the Justice League. From Batman's arsenal to Cyborg's alien tech, interface with the Justice League database to learn their most advanced secrets. Then we've got Justice League The New Heroes. Join Ray Fisher on a personal tour to meet the newest members of the Justice League, Aquaman, The Flash, and Cyborg. We've got The Return of Superman. This is what I was talking about before. All it says next to that is bonus scenes not seen in theaters. So it looks like it's going to be some, like we sort of saw a little teaser of it in like I was talking about, the teaser for the home media release, but it looks like that's where we're going to get those extra scenes,
yeah,
with some Man of Steel.
I'm excited as you are for the potential of the Man of Steel soundtrack, but I feel like I should caution you that maybe that was just used for the sake of the promotional piece.
That's a good point, because you know I can't trust them now, because in the final Justice League trailer we got that Man of Steel music, and then in the actual movie we didn't get it.
Well, there was a little bit of the Krypton stuff, very little tease in there.
There was, and that's why I said it wasn't quite non-existent, but it was almost non-existent. I mean, what was that, 10 seconds in the movie we got of that?
It was non-existent.
it was, yeah. I mean, I'll give it to Adam. It was there for a tiny moment. When the league was going to resurrect Superman, but that was not nearly enough.
They dropped the ball on that, in my opinion.
I think we're all in agreement that it should have been there more. I mean, I've got no problem with you using the 1978 theme for sure, but you could have incorporated the other one as well. I thought there's no reason why you can't use both, in my opinion.
You're right there, 100%. You could have used the Superman, the 79 when he flies off at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, they work well together. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. Somebody made a YouTube video where they actually mixed the two themes. So they mixed the John Williams and the Hans Zimmer Superman themes, and it sounded really cool.
Yeah. See, that's what he should have done. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. But, like, just on the other – so I'm excited to see those scenes, obviously. The other thing that I'm interested in is – When they say bonus scenes, are they going to be as a featurette, or are they going to be reintegrated back?
The way it sounds to me is that it's going to be like a finished. It's going to be like with the bonus features, because they're listed with the bonus features.
Okay.
So I don't think it's going to be incorporated into the movie. But we've got a couple more, Adam.
Oh, there's more. Okay, good.
Of these, yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Keep going. Yeah.
Steppenwolf the Conqueror, join actor. I have no idea how the hell to pronounce this guy's name. Still.
Hines.
Kieran Hines, thank you, and the filmmakers as they reveal the story behind mankind's ancient enemy and the Justice League's greatest challenge. Then we've got a series, basically, of featurettes called Scene Studies, And the description for these is, take a closer look at the filmmaking process behind Justice League's most visually exciting and action-packed sequences. And we've got four of these, it looks like. One of them is called Revisiting the Amazons. One of them is called Wonder Woman's Rescue. One of them is called Heroes Park. One of them is called The Tunnel Battle. And then it looks like the last featurette is called Suit Up, The Look of the League. Costume designer Michael Wilkinson explores the innovation and artistry that goes into creating the costumes of DC's iconic heroes.
Yeah, I mean, all these featurettes sound great, and I can't wait to get my hands on the Blu-ray so that I can watch these.
The other one that stands out to me is the one with besides the bonus scenes is the one with Ray Fisher, because we all know how enthusiastic he always is about the character of Cyborg and about this movie. So I feel like getting a personal tour from him would be pretty cool and exciting.
And I really do hope that. that somehow, whether it's a Cyborg solo film or not, we get to see Ray Fisher back in another movie.
They all love their roles besides Ben Affleck, it seems like, to be honest with you.
Everybody's happy to be there, except for one guy.
Joe Morton seems to still think the Cyborg film is happening. So
right, but you can't really go by what actors say, because they're often the last to know. Like, you know, Walter Hamada's coming in, and he's restructuring things. I think the last person he's going to call is Joe Morton and say, hey, by the way, we are or are not doing a Cyborg. You know, he's not going to call him. Joe Morton's going to find out when, oh, but by the way, sir, we're not extending your option.
Joe Morton would be the first person I'd call, because I'd geek out about Smallville with him.
Yes, you would call him, but I can guarantee you, Walter Hamada is not going to call him until the 11th hour. I'll tell you that right now. I wouldn't trust that. I wouldn't trust him saying, "Oh, well," because the plans that he heard about. Guess when he heard about those plans. When he was filming his scenes on Justice League, which was what, a year and a half ago.
He wants more DC money.
Well, I can guarantee you, he wants a solo movie because he wants the paycheck. That's his concern. But look, like I said, I'm not knocking the possibility of a Cyborg movie. I hope it happens. Sure, why not? Especially, look, here's the thing. If Black Panther hits it out of the park, and I think it will be, I think DC is going to, like I said, at the very least, get Ray Fisher in another one of these movies, maybe Flashpoint. Or like I said, if Black Panther is a real big hit, I think they'll keep the Cyborg solo movie in play.
Hey, I hope so. I think I've said it before, but Ray Fisher was the surprise of Justice League for me. I thought that Cyborg was going to be my least favorite of the Justice League members. Not that I wasn't going to like him, but that he was the one that I had the least excitement for going in, and I was just really impressed with Ray Fisher's performance in the film. So
Jordan, if you really want a Cyborg movie, you know what you have to do, right?
What's that?
You better get your ass out to the theater and watch Black Panther.
Yeah. I think Black Lightning will factor into that too. If that show does well.
Well, yeah, true. But I think Warner Brothers and DC's, the studio division is going to be looking first and foremost at the box office of their competition. I mean, why do you think there's talk of Marvel doing a Black Widow movie finally?
Oh, that's, everyone knows. That's the same thing with Captain Marvel. Is that her name?
It's because of the success of Wonder Woman. And,
oh, 100%.
Look, until I actually see a movement on a Black Widow movie with my own two eyes, I'm gonna wait and see, because Kevin Feige has been dropping these. Oh yeah, well we're thinking about it, or we have some ideas for years, and until I actually see them in front of cameras, I'm not gonna believe a thing of that. So, but yeah, so like I said, let's hope Black Panther hits it out of the park, and let's hope that Black Lightning does continue its strong momentum, because those will factor into. To the future of Cyborg on film.
I don't think there's any hope to Black Panther. I'm pretty 100% confident that's going to do gangbusters.
Oh, yeah. and well, it should, because the trailers look fantastic, so it should do
Agreed. I subscribe from the it's okay to like them all theory.
Oh yeah, well, so do we. So do we. I mean, look, I and I'll say this analogy, you know, because Travis, I don't know if Travis has ever heard me say this analogy. You know, I like them both. To me, Marvel is like a one night stand. It's a lot of fun in the moment, but then when I'm done, I forget about it till the next one. Whereas DC, if it was a woman, it would be the one that I'd want to marry and take home to my mother. So there's, that's my analogy of DC and Marvel, and how I approach it. So take that.
I've never heard it put that way. Never heard it put that way.
Well, there you go. That's my analogy. Copyright pending. Yeah. So I'm gonna get this Blu-ray for sure. Because I like the actual Justice League movie that we got. And so I'm definitely going to be purchasing this. Are both of you going to be purchasing this movie?
Hell yeah. I've got it pre-ordered already. I've had it pre-ordered for a while, actually, even before we got a release date. So yeah, I'm psyched to be able to watch it from the comfort of my home.
And Travis, you're going to be getting it as well?
I'm getting both. I'm going to get the digital copy because I don't want to wait a whole month.
Yeah.
So,
the reason why I ask is because, you know, there's an uproar online. I'm not buying this version of the movie until Warner Brothers releases the Snyder Cut and blah 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 blah. Look, I'm not going to be offensive, but I'll say this: if you didn't like the Justice League movie in theaters, and you're not going to buy it because you didn't like the movie you saw, then I respect your choice. If you are purely not buying this version just because you're falling on the sword with Zack Snyder, I have an issue with that. Because to me, that suggests, are you more of a fan of Zack Snyder or are you a fan of the DC Universe?
That's what it boils down to, but you got your loyal Snyder fans. Like, personally, I really enjoyed Justice League, but I'm sure if Zack Snyder had a cut and I watched that,
I would too, but I'm saying, I respect 100% people that saw Justice League in the theater and say, you know what, I don't like that. I'm not buying the movie. Great, yeah, 100%. But if your stance is, well, look what they did to Zack Snyder and they're not releasing the Snyder Cut, so as punishment, I'm not going to buy the movie. To me, you're not a real DC fan. I'm sorry.
Oh, I agree with you there.
So I do respect the people who didn't like the movie and aren't going to buy it on that basis alone.
Yeah.
But I was asking because there are people, quote unquote, boycotting the movie for quote unquote Zack Snyder. And to me,
this and petitions are starting to get a little nuts now. I think everyone got to calm down a little bit. Get a petition going.
Here's what I hope that Justice League does, like hits the top of the charts, in spite of these people that are boycotting it, just because it'll prove that in the grand scheme of movie viewership, Zack Snyder sycophants are a small minority.
I'm very confident in how it's going to do on home media because I think a lot of people didn't go out to see it in theaters because they were burned by BVS.
Jordan, I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that because again, people are you know, I was getting into Twitter arguments and I stopped that because the block button is the best thing in the world. I got to be honest with you, it's the most fantastic button on Twitter, block, and I encourage everybody to use it more frequently. Because Travis, you've heard me say this because you listened to the episode. You were on the episode with me, Jordan. I've said Man of Steel was a masterpiece. It was my favorite Superman movie. Correct?
Yeah. Oh, there's no. I agree with you 100%. Superman Returns. You don't even throw a punch.
Right. Right. But then we also had an episode on Batman versus Superman, right?
Yeah.
Where I said I really like most of it. I have my issues with it, but I'm a fan of it. But, Jordan, you and I can understand how BVS could turn a portion of the audience off, correct?
Well, it did, yeah. Right.
And we can correlate that with the underwhelming results of Justice League's domestic box office, correct?
Exactly, yeah. I think a lot of people were burned by BVS, didn't go out and see Justice League, but then I think that the whole media here's why I think the home media is actually going to be pretty successful for Justice League. Those people are going to hear from other people that didn't like BVS, because there's a lot of people like this who didn't like BVS that I've heard that like Justice League. They're going to hear from those people. Okay, well, this was better though, which I don't agree with personally, but that's the way a lot of people feel, I know. And so I think those people are going to purchase Justice League when it comes out on home media and give it a chance then.
So, I don't think you guys even got to worry, because Warner Brothers and DC, you look at top Blu-ray sales, they're always in the top. It doesn't matter. The collectors are going to go out and buy it. The fans are going to go out and buy it. That's going to be up there in top sellers regardless.
And the reason I say this is because I'm trying to make a point. Like I said, I respect if you went to the theater, saw it, and didn't like it, and are not going to buy it. But what the Snyder sycophants are unwilling to do is they're unwilling to allow me to say that I love Man of Steel. I enjoyed a lot of elements of BVS, but I can understand why BVS turned people off. And I can correlate that reaction to the suffering, you know, JL suffered from the sins of its predecessor, which was BVS. I can do that. But according to the Snyder sycophants, it's either you love everything he does and you manipulate pictures of his face on Jesus and call him Zaddy, or you're a hater.
Well, see, that's where, like, I have a hard time because BVS is probably my favorite movie. But, like, I really like Justice League. It's no big deal. Like, I don't...
Here's the big difference between you and a lot of these people. You're a normal, well-adjusted human being.
Yeah, but what I think is, do you
tweet and call Zack Snyder Zaddy?
No, not at all. I know the group that you're talking about, but I think you're jumping the gun a little bit on that being the main reason that Justice League didn't do well. I thought there was a lot of factors in there. I thought the media was more to blame than the people that just hate, like, only love Zack Snyder, because for a whole year and a half, man, we've gotten, before the Justice League movie come out, relentless amounts of clickbait articles about troubles on set, troubles this, troubles that, everybody hates this, everybody hates it. Every day, it got to a point.
I agree with you 100%. There are other factors.
So I got a feeling that a lot of people that, like you said, were turned off from BVS a little bit, wouldn't give Justice League a chance anyway because of all the negative press that it got.
Other factors, 100%. And the clickbait.
I don't think that's the main factor is what I was trying to say.
The clickbait is a factor, but what my emphasis is, and then we'll move on, is that there's a certain segment of fandom that refuses to see the correlation between BVS turning people off and Justice League suffering at the box office. They refuse to see that correlation.
Yeah, if you're if you're saying it's the only correlation, I can understand people getting a little frustrated.
No,
is one of the main factors. You are right.
Correct. And that's what I'm saying. And I can say that while still loving Man of Steel as much as I do, and really liking BVS, but acknowledging it has problems. And for the record, Watchmen is one of the most amazing comic book adaptations I've ever seen. So anybody that erroneously thinks I hate Zack Snyder needs to get their head examined. But
that's people that don't have enough time. They're people that got too much time on their hands and need a hobby. That's what that
right,
is.
Right, exactly. All right, any more news, Jordan? Movie news, you said there was more.
There's one more thing when it comes to movie news, and that's that we have the Shazam casting keeps rolling out. Now we've got our wizard, and he's going to be played by Ron Safis Jones in Shazam.
Oh, awesome. And he's from This Is Us, and he also appeared in Luke Cage, correct?
Yes. Started with this. I don't watch This Is Us, but, of course, starring with Green Arrow in This Is Us. You know, I had to say that.
Why did I set that up, people? I set myself up for the Smallville reference.
You have failed this podcast.
Yeah, I know. But look,
wrong Green Arrow, Travis.
That is my Green Arrow, Jordan.
The four Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's all connected. And, by the way, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not. First of all, I've liked all the casting in this on this film. Clearly, visually, they're going with the Geoff Johns, Gary Frank miniseries, the Shazam miniseries that came as a backup story in the first arc of the New 52 Justice League, from a visual standpoint. And I'm excited. I mean, it gets going in what? Let's see here. Let me check my calendar. It gets going in exactly about 2.5 weeks. It starts filming right here in Toronto. So
Adam, are you going to be going down on set trying to?
Well, if I ever find out where they are, I might try and stumble over there. But you know, ideally, I wanted to do it when Suicide Squad was here. I was so desperate to go down there. Obviously, because I wanted to see Batman and the Batmobile, but let's be honest, I really wanted to go down there to meet Margot Robbie and, you know, try and persuade her to leave her then fiance. But it's a, you know, hey.
I miss my own chance with the Aquaman movie, because I don't know if you guys know this, but Aquaman's father lives where I'm to.
Oh, right, in the movie. Yeah, yeah.
So they filmed that scene there, and I came out, I think I went out to the place 2 days after they were finished shooting.
Oh,
I was devastated.
Oh, man. So close.
But I've seen Aquaman. I've talked to Jason Momoa before, so.
Oh, cool. So I could have met Margot Robbie, and you could have met Amber Heard, but sadly, the fates didn't align.
I'm committed to trying to see some Black Lightning filming, because that's filming where I am in Atlanta.
Yeah, get your butt down there. We know you got, you know.
Oh, if you're in Atlanta, there's definitely no way. They got protocols for it all, because Marvel films everything down there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But yeah, if you can get some, if you can, you know, get yourself on set, don't get arrested, because I can't guarantee that I'd send you bail money, but. see what you can do.
Hey, well, Cammy, of course, the listeners will know she was one of our guests.
Yeah.
She's been one of our guests a couple times. She says that she's seen where they've been filming here. So.
Oh, cool.
So I don't know. Maybe
get her as our resident. Get her to go spy on filming. I think.
Jordan, you got to find them in their hobbies. Like when I met Jason Momoa, he was playing ice hockey. So you got to find them when they're not.
Momoa's
a hockey fan.
Oh, he was. Well, I was skating. I have a shinny game at 12 to 1:30, and after I was finished, I was leaving, and he was coming in with his bag for to go and skate at 2:00. So I stopped him, just told him how much of a fan I was, and that I was really excited for Justice League, but more excited for Aquaman. And he was just in his classic Jason Momoa. He's like, "Dude, you have no idea." And just like, take care, and put up his two fingers and went out.
That's awesome.
Nice.
That does sound like Jason Momoa.
Yeah, I love the guy. He's great.
He's here all the time because they're filming Frontier. I haven't watched the show, but
I gotta start watching. You know what? I wanted to watch it, but then I said I don't want to watch anything before I see him as Aquaman. I did that now, so now I'm gonna start watching Frontier. I have them all saved on my PVR, which is taking up a lot of space. So I'll have to start watching them.
On Netflix, I'm not sure. I got to start watching that too.
Yeah, so I got to check that out. But I'm back to the news. I'm so good with this Cephas Jones III or whatever casting. I think my family members watch This Is Us, and they... When I told him and I asked who's he, who does he play, and they're like, "Oh, he was so good. His character died now, but he was such a good, you know." So I'm like, "All right," and so I'll take their advice and get on board with this casting. I like it. But
what did they say about Green Arrow in that show?
They say, "Don't tell your co-host because he's never going to shut up about Smallville." They said he's good. He's really good, but they liked him from Smallville as well. So.
Oh, okay, cool.
They've had pre-exposure to him from Smallville.
They have good taste.
Hit show, because none of the other casts have like ratcheted on the hit shows afterwards.
Well,
so that's a big
strangely enough, Kristen Kreuk has.
Well, hit show. I'm trying. We're blurring the lines of hit. If This Is Us is a top sitcom.
Yeah,
in America.
Okay, I get what you're saying, but at least. Yeah. Kristen Kreuk has kept working consistently.
Oh, she's been star of her own show a couple
Allison
times.
Allison Mack has joined the sex cult, which is good for her.
Well, she's the best actress of them all, apparently. She fooled everyone.
Yeah. And then Sam Jones III was arrested for possession of narcotics or something of the like.
Oh, not Pete.
So, you know. That's
he, funny, is not
that,
what
you... that super stretchy gum that he took, he extended too far into the Audi. And,
I'm jealous of you guys in Canada because Kristen Crook has a new show, but it's not available, and it's not going to be available in the States, at least at first.
I've been watching it, and I've been thinking of you as I watch it. I should just rub this in Jordan's face every chance I get.
We get the short end of the stick, don't we, Adam, when it comes to entertainment and show availability here in Canada. Here
to I remember you were telling me, Travis, you had a hell of a time trying to find The Ray.
Oh, man, that was...
Yes, but I found it. I found the way to find it.
Yeah, same here. I found a way to find it after a while.
I had my people scouring the globe for a way to find it, and I found it. but no, but it's, you know what, I will say. Kristen Crook, gotta give her props because she's actually really good in this show, in the two episodes that I saw. And it's proof that when they actually give her, you know.
Fantastic. Oh, don't you start. Don't you start, Adam.
Well, I got to be honest. I got to be, you know me, I don't beat around the bush. I call it like I see it. And when she has writers that write her, you know, character well, and this includes certain episodes of Smallville, but when she has good material to work with, she's actually really solid. The point of it all is they're all doing much better than Tom Welling, who is now infected Lucifer. Hopefully it'll be a short stint.
He must have heard you, though, Adam. He must have heard you because I did read earlier that him and Michael Rosenbaum agreed to go to a Comic-Con.
Well, it's about goddamn time.
Yeah, that's why I think he heard you in one of the earlier podcasts I listened to.
Yeah.
I sent out a tweet trying to convince him and rally him to come to DragonCon here in Atlanta this year because Michael Rosenbaum was there last year and I got to meet him and that was awesome. But he was the only technically there was somebody else there but not like a Smallville star, like somebody who was on Smallville technically. I'm really
I hope if you meet Allison Max and Mac you don't go and join that sex cult. That's really
I'm really hoping that Rosenbaum brings some of his. I mean, I don't even know if he's coming again this year, but I would love for him to come back and for him to bring some of his co-stars along with him.
Well, I can just imagine his reaction after he met Jordan. He's probably like, man, that guy's obsessed with our show. He's gonna let it go.
No, he'll be like, man, even he didn't like me with Lana.
Exactly. <yeah. laughs> I'm choking. That was actually quite funny. But no, I met him as well, and he's really, really nice guy. So I can attest to what Jordan was saying. Where were we? We got lost. What news item were we on now?
We've got... do we have any TV news? Did you say that we had TV news, or should we jump into our comic news?
Well, actually, before I segue, because we're still on movies... So I want to plug Revenge of the Fans again. Mario Francisco Robles published a article today, this morning actually, where he speculated that we may be getting Suicide Squad 2 a little bit earlier than expected, at least in terms of a start date, because Joel Kinnaman, who played...
Rick Flag.
Yes, Rick Flag posted on his Instagram that he, Jay Hernandez, who played Diablo, and Jai Courtney, who played Boomerang, have all started getting into shape and training again. That, coupled with Margot Robbie's comments in recent interviews, where she says she hopes to have her baseball bat and fishnets back on sooner rather than later, specifically this year, could suggest that Suicide Squad 2 is a lot closer to a start date than we thought. As of right now, it's scheduled to start in October, and that's largely due to Will Smith's schedule. But as Mario Francisco Robles points out, you could start earlier and film scenes of Deadpool, dead shot with his mask on and use a body double and then save the important scenes with him for later when Will Smith becomes available. So head over there and read his full report to get all the details. But
I think that's awesome that it could. I mean, I'm very excited for Suicide Squad 2, so that's awesome. The only thing that concerns me is Jay Hernandez being there, because you know how I feel about Resurrections, and of course,
right,
spoilers.
But wait a minute, hold on a second.
We didn't see him die.
It's still a fake out death, though, so it still bothers me just as much.
But what if it's flashbacks or?
That's why I say that. I mean, I'm not totally concerned, but like it has me a little bit worried. But yeah, if it's just flashbacks,
look,
that's fine.
I love this character so much that if they found a way to bring him back, I'd take it, as long as it didn't involve Cara Delevingne's Enchantress doing her belly dance routine. And no, I'm never gonna let that die because it was so ridiculous.
No good disagreements here.
I really liked El Diablo too, but I still, no matter what, I don't want to see him get resurrected or
you have a weird hang up about Resurrections.
I gotta jump in three there because these heroes flaw, shoot laser beams, blow breath, run fast. You throw that all everything out the window when it comes to that.
Jordan, I don't know what religious beliefs you pertain to, but if you're Catholic or Christian in any way, you're gonna have trouble when it's all said and done here, because I don't know how it's gonna go for you.
Oh my God. No, I mean, I've explained my hang up a bunch of times on the show.
It's
I know. It takes away from the death. I agree
with
you.
But it takes away from the death and it reduces the stakes.
Listen, I'm just going to say this right now. Because I am of the Catholic faith. How much I practice it is another thing entirely. But I will say that if I ever encounter you waiting at the gates for entry, I'm going to just tell St. Peter or whoever's at the gate that you are not a fan of Resurrections, and they should consider long and hard about letting you in.
Wouldn't he get to stay there then, though? Because
he'd be in purgatory.
Okay. I figured where you said he didn't like Resurrections.
I'd be on Lee and you then.
probably right, Lexi. I imagine myself on a cloud with Margot Robbie. Whereas
Jordan's in a horrible island.
And maybe Gal Gadot will come by and visit as well. And then there'll be Jordan, rewatching. Well, no, I won't say Catwoman because he likes that movie. He'll be rewatching Blade on a loop.
Oh no!
And actually,
Jordan, you gotta call and wake up Adam. He's dreaming that.
And that's the recommendation I'm gonna make when we get up there. So I'm just warning you. I won't have your back up there, I'll tell you that much right now. So that's cool about Suicide Squad. What do you think, Travis? Do you think are you excited about the potential of getting it started earlier?
I think, like you guys were saying, it all depends on Will Smith's schedule too. We got to see what he's doing, but I'm just excited to see it. I hope they have more grounded. I think anybody would agree that if they made it more like Assault on Arkham, it would have been a far more critically successful movie, because I really enjoyed that. I was hoping, when I first seen Batman in the first flashback of him taking down Deadshot or the Joker, one of them, I can't remember which one came first now, I thought, oh my God, we're going to get Batman come in at the end and take down the entire Suicide Squad.
Sure.
But no, alas, that didn't happen. But when he gave that threat at the end of Suicide Squad that we'll shut it down, I really hope we see Batman and a couple other heroes come in at the end of Suicide Squad and shut it down.
That would be awesome.
There are rumors that Ben Affleck's last hurrah as Batman could be in Suicide Squad 2.
Rumors? No, that never happens in this area.
No, but these are good rumors. These are good rumors. As opposed to, it's a mess. The movie's a mess. The editing is terrible, and so forth and so forth. But
well, he worked with Gavin O'Connor
right,
on the.
Right, and it makes sense. It makes sense for sure. But the only TV news we have before we get to the comics is I don't know if did we talk about this last time that it appears. I know we talked about it off air, but it appears Supergirl is casting for Lois Lane.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about it last episode because I I decided not to because it was sort of just a rumor, but now apparently it's been debunked. That's what I was talking to. I was watching Arrow with Jasmine last night. Of course, listeners, again, know her. She's been on our show before. Yeah. And she told me, I hadn't seen this, but she told me that the rumor had been debunked. So. Oh,
okay. All right. Okay. Well, there goes that. Never mind then. But we'll stick with Superman for a second, transition to comics. In a few months, a landmark issue will be upon us. And that is Action Comics number 1000. And we now have a cover art for it. And we also have some of the creative talent involved. The cover features Superman perched on a building with his arms by his hips. Yeah, we see the Daily Planet globe in the background, a dove also flying beside the or on top of the Daily Planet globe, and Superman, as I said, is in a very classic pose, but there's an addition to his costume, or a re-addition, I should say, and that is the underwear is back on the outside. Whether this is going to be inside the actual comic, or just for the sake of the cover, I'm not sure. But look, my stance is this in terms of the trunks. If they're there, I'm fine. If they're not, I'm fine too. Because to me, Superman having the trunks on the outside of his pants has never defined the character. To me, it's the way the character behaves more so that defines him than the costume. I mean, there are than the trunks, I should say. I mean, a lot of fans get bent out of shape if he's got the spit curl on his head or the shorts on the outside. I don't get bent out of shape over that. I get more concerned about, okay, how are they portraying the character? That to me is the core essential element. And then red and blue of the costume. I mean, you can't put him in an orange costume with a C on it because that wouldn't make sense. To me, whether it's got underwear or not, it doesn't make or break it. Some of the creative talent that's working on this, of course, is Dan Jurgens, who writes Action Comics, Peter Tomasi, and who's the other guy?
Patrick Gleason?
Yes, who are writing Superman at the moment. Then doing backup stories are Tom King.
My favorite writer.
Who Jordan has a crush on. A bro crush. And Scott Snyder is going to be doing a story. And it's going to be the DC Comics debut of Brian Michael Bendis. He's doing a backup story as well. So I'm looking forward to this comic. I'm going to definitely get my copy. But what do you guys think of the trunks being back on the costume? Is that a big deal for you or is it not? Travis, what's your take on it?
That's not a big deal to me. I just judge it based on my sight. Like, I love that picture you guys showed me of the cover. I thought that was a perfect Superman. Trunks, no trunks. Like, I enjoyed Man of Steel's costume just as much as I enjoyed the one that we're talking about right now. Like you said, it's more about what the character of Superman is doing than what he, like, trunks or no trunks.
Right.
And I absolutely agree that the most important thing is the way the character's written. But, I mean, again, we're all fans. We all love to debate about the costumes and stuff and what our favorite costume is. And I much prefer no trunks when it comes to Superman. So I hope that this is not they're not reverting back to the trunks. It's very possible because, like, a lot of times, like, especially when they do variant covers, like, they won't do the current costume on there. So I think there's a chance that maybe they're just doing this as sort of a throwback nod because it's a 1000th issue. I think there's a possibility that they're not actually reverting to this in the comic, but I'd prefer no trunks, but it's fine.
Well, we know what you'd like to see him in. You'd like to see him in a red jacket with a blue t-shirt and jeans.
What about black trench coat? Black trench coat.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I knew you were going to say that.
or that leather, that red leather jacket where during that season I used to call them the Super Fonz, you know, the remember Happy Days and Fonzie, that's what I used to call them, the Super Fonz. But let's wait and see. I'm looking forward to the issue, and I'm, like I said, I'm definitely going to get that historic a copy of that historic landmark in Superman and comics history. But until then, let's get into the rest of the show. We've got two things to cover today. It's another episode of Batman the Animated Series and the pilot for Black Lightning. So let's start with Batman the Animated Series. What episode are we on today, Jordan?
We are on episode 5 in production order. Right. So that would be Pretty Poison. And I've got the IMDb description pulled up, Adam. This time I was proactive with this.
All right. Wait a minute now. We got to do
since I, well, yes. Since I've seen it, you've got to be, or you or Travis has got to be the one to say okay, whether you think
Travis,
it's going to be one or two.
Here's what we do: we have a bet on IMDb summaries. Is it over two sentences or under? You pick first.
Gonna go under.
Damn it! I'm gonna have to go over. All right.
Travis has got it. It's under.
So, Travis, unfortunately, you win a year supply of Jordan staying at your house and talking nonstop about Catwoman. Enjoy that.
All right, here's our description. When Harvey Dent is poisoned with derivative from an extinct flower, Batman must hunt down the assailant who has the antidote. The villainous plant fanatic, Poison Ivy. And then I'll go ahead, because I did it last time. So directed by Boyd Kirkland, written by Paul Dini and Michael Reeves. They got story credit. And then screenplay credit by Tom Ruegger.
Awesome. Okay. All right. Yeah, let's go. I mean, Travis, you watched this episode. What do you think of it?
I really enjoyed it. It was a while since I've seen it. And I must say, I enjoyed Harvey, the first part of the episode where it shows the flashback scene of Harvey and Bruce 5 years ago,
yes,
and then it flash forwards right to what they're doing now. Mm-hmm. Harvey's there trying to swoon a girl while Bruce is there chasing down a helicopter.
Yeah, and that was so funny. Harvey talking about him about Bruce, and it's ironic because then you see Bruce. He's talking about there's no secrets between us, and then you see Batman confronting this criminal.
He's like, he gets his kicks in and he gives him a nice solid kick.
I love that.
It was very well put together, that opening scene.
And I'll say,
go ahead, Alfred too.
No, he's always good though. Alfred is a constant on that show.
Speaking of what you said, Travis, I really liked, because like this episode is one of the few examples we see Harvey before he becomes Two-Face on this show, before the Two-Face two-parter. And not only they sort of doubled down on getting us to see him and Bruce's friendship, because not only do we see them in present day as friends, we saw that they've been friends for a long time, because we see the five year flashback that you alluded to.
Yeah,
and I would assume they've been friends longer than that, because the way they were acting in that flashback seemed like they've been friends for a very long time.
It's nice that they did set up that friendship though, unlike Batman Forever, which just
We talked about that at length, but the listeners won't have heard that yet by the time this releases. But you will, once we release that Batman Forever review eventually, you'll hear Adam and I go off the rails talking about the disappointment that was Two-Face in that movie.
Yeah, and I really, to me, one of the things that they did really well was Poison Ivy, because you get a sense that she's a little deranged, that she could be
just a little, Adam.
Just a little. She could be construed as, you know, crazy, psychotic,
sociopath. Right.
As the description describes her, the villainous plant fanatic.
Yeah, exactly, and you know, a killer, because she's kissing people with poison. Giving them a poison kiss, I should say. But when you distill all that away, she is a proponent of nature, of sustaining the earth, and that is a good cause to champion, and so you got to respect her on that level. Does she take it too far? Yes, but there is what I love about the show is that amidst all that craziness, they managed to really let her that part of her innate goodness still show. That caring, that the fact that she does have a heart is just not for human beings, it's for plants.
That's a good point, Adam. Also, that was her downfall too, because she had Batman that did the rights, but her love of the plant life and the red wild rose, I think is the name of the plant,
yes,
caused her to give Batman the antidote to save the plant.
And even, I want to get your guys' thoughts on this, even Batman, as forceful and like dark and as authoritative as he is, he does show her compassion by letting her keep the plant, right? Or the rules or whatever they, right?
Yeah, it's like when he lets Harley keep the dress at the end of what's that episode? Harley's Holiday.
Right. So as much as they make Batman, you know, they make sure to make him show him, look how no nonsense, and he's a bit of a hard ass. But at the end of the day, he's still, you know, he's still got that heart of gold as well. So I mean, they do a good balancing act between both in both avenues, and somebody's dog would agree.
I found we got to see Batman also like be really good, like got to see him do a lot of detective work, seeing researching the plant, stealing the slide, finding out from the hug of Poison Ivy when she was in her non-criminal like form. He realized right away that she was being insincere, went right back and investigated her immediately. I really like to show Batman as the detective that he is.
Yeah, I would agree. And in terms of the animation, I really like this. I really love it. I mean, is it me, or does Poison Ivy give off callback to what is her name, Jessica Rabbit from Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Does anybody get that?
When she walked out after giving Harvey a kiss, that's what I got. That's the callback I got when she done the wiggle.
Okay, good. So it's not just me.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, speaking of the animation, this episode is one of the best, because like it's well known that there was quite a bit of variety, and they used a lot of different animation studios on Batman the Animated Series, and there was quite a bit of variety in terms of the quality, but this is one of the best looking episodes of the original run before they transitioned into the new Batman Adventures, which in my opinion looked much better. But this is like a really crisply animated episode, like it looks really, really good.
I noticed that as well. You could see some good Batman shots when he's taking a Poison Ivy at her place.
Yeah. And
when Batman in the helicopter, it looked like a little nod to The Dark Knight Returns when he was standing up. Like, it's just a quick second shot, but it did look like it was an homage to The Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And of course, you know, Poison Ivy was a bombshell. She, you know, very, very much had that you know, pin-up style model look to her. And the voice actress, which was who, John, you're good at this
information. Yeah, Diane Pershing.
Yeah, she does a really, she balances that crazy yet alluringly sexy vocal performance quite well. So
yeah, she's the definitive Poison Ivy, in my opinion. Well, she's great.
I mean, yeah.
Oh my God, yes. Sorry, Uma Thurman.
Hey, well, to be fair, though, I think it's unfair to compare voice actor versus the live actor.
I will say, look,
Mark Hamill gets a lot of props, so we're going to have to stop giving him super much, because he gets just as much as any good actor of a like.
Well, and what I'll say, though, too, is in defense of Uma Thurman, she's the best thing about that atrocious piece of garbage.
She wasn't the best. She's a good. I actually do like Uma Thurman's Poison Ivy. Okay, But she's not the best thing. The best thing, and we've talked about this, is that conversation between Bruce and Alfred
in that movie. But I'm saying, okay, yes, but the best acting moment belongs to those, to that scene. But her performance, I think she was one of the best, one of the only standout characters in that movie. But yeah, no, this episode, like I said, if there are people that are unfamiliar with Poison Ivy, make sure this is one of your first forays into the character.
Oh, it's a great origin episode for her.
Yes.
And
you will not be disappointed.
And they make her really creepy, like, to when they sort of set up her coming back at the end, where you see her in the jail cell, and it's like, it's not over yet. Is sort of the tease that they give you there, and she's really creepy in that scene. And sort of, I love the way they set her up in this episode. And I was like, I say, one thing I wanted to point out was, I feel like Bullock is, when every episode he's in, he's a standout in Batman Animated Series. But this episode in particular, he's hilarious when he's interrogating the chef about the chocolate mousse. that cracked me up. This episode, and this is the last one, because I've talked about on the show before how Batman the Animated Series, I grew up with it on VHS, and I only had select episodes, but I had that one VHS that had the first five, so this is the last one that's going to be for a while that I did have on VHS as a kid. So this one is one that has a really special place in my heart, and it's probably my favorite episode of the first five of the series that were on that VHS. This one, I feel like, is the one that I watched the most out of those five as a kid. I'd go back to this one a lot because I think this is a really solid episode.
Awesome. Let's get into our rating for the episode. Travis, what would you rate this episode?
Out of what are we doing? Out of
man? Jordan likes to do letter grade, so let's do a letter grade.
I'm gonna do. I'm a listener of the pod, so I'm gonna take Adam's.
Oh, you want to go old school with okay.
I'm gonna give it 9 Venus fly traps out of 10.
Okay, I like that.
All right, and I'm gonna give it. You know what? I'll accommodate our guest, and I'll say 9.5 Poison Ivy booty wiggles out of 10. How about that?
And I'll give it an A. So,
boom.
I won't be fun and creative, I guess.
And so that wraps up that. We all have similar thoughts on that, and it was another good episode in the excellent series that was Batman the Animated Series, and we can't look forward to continuing our journey through the series.
We've got a divisive one coming up next.
Which one is next? I haven't.
The Underdwellers.
Oh, good luck. Is that the one with man with the flute
or whatever? With the sewer king?
Oh, Christ Almighty.
man. Wake me up when you get the Heart of Ice.
Yeah.
Yes, I can't wait for Heart of Ice. It's not too far away.
No, it's pretty close. That's why I was.
But I actually, it's no Heart of Ice, obviously, but I kind of like the Sewer King one, so.
Of course you do, says the guy who thinks Catwoman is a good movie.
So I guess we got to move on to our other DCTV episode now, a much newer DCTV episode, and that would be the pilot of our latest of many, really becoming many, live-action DCTV shows, which would be Black Lightning, the pilot, which is titled The Resurrection. Mm-hmm. Let's see if IMDb has a description up for it yet.
Okay, since you took the under last time, I'm taking under this time, Travis.
I got over, yeah. I'll stick with over.
Okay.
New show. I'm going banking on that.
All right. It's one sentence.
Oh.
Right. But Jordan, you're not coming to my house. That's.
Okay. All right. It says, the CW's first African-American superhero headliner unrolls the secrets of his past to protect his city and his family. And I'll go director and writers again. Directed by Salim Akil and written by Salim Akil as well. So, and of course, he's one of the executive producers, along with Mara Brock Akil, who's his wife, and Greg Berlanti.
Cool. So let's get into it. I'll kind of like lead us to different discussion points because I don't want to go through beat by beat the whole episode. But
sure.
One of the things that instantly sticks out to me about this show is that it is not a blow-by-blow origin tale in the traditional sense.
Yeah, and that really makes it stand out from the other DCCW shows in that we're not seeing a young hero on their first day on the job. We're seeing an older hero coming out of retirement, which is a really unique dynamic.
And
go ahead. He's very well established, which is good because he got cred, like he got a name for himself that the criminals already fear. They just think he's gone. But they know about him, which is good. This is a good way to start a show.
Yeah, and it's interesting because what I find this allows them to do is where I've criticized some of the other DC TV pilots for kind of having to rush through the origin and or accident, explain all the powers, and then suit him up by midway through the episode. And it causes episodes to be slightly rushed. What I like
can't criticize Smallville for that, my friend.
Well, no, but there is something else to criticize Smallville about. But you're right, I can't criticize it for that. But what this allows is for me that you get to care about the person putting on the costume. So you get a sense of who Jefferson Pierce is, what his issues are, so that by the time he comes out of retirement and puts on the costume, it's an earned moment and not something that's forced.
And I've got to say, I was so impressed with Chris Williams in the title role here. Yeah. I mean, he really gave it. I mean, I was impressed with him in the trailers and stuff too, but he really gave a very nuanced, he was great in both roles. He was great as Black Lightning, being intimidating, but then also being like this leader in his community and this principal and this person that people look up to. So I thought he just did a phenomenal job. And I was really impressed.
You could tell that he cared a lot too about his students, about his community, about his school, and that's what motivates him to be Black Lightning. And what I particularly enjoyed was when he was talking to Gamby about why he walked away. I like seeing that a hero struggle with the endless pile up of being a hero, like what you got to go through. He's like, we started with Tobias, then it was crooked senators, then it was mob bosses, then it was every store corner, and you could tell he was really fed up with just the endless battle, but then he got that little message Gamby sends in the link, and it shows Buddy when he stopped the mugging, saying like, I would have never seen my son graduate, never seen my grandkids, like, thank you Black Lightning. So it shows like his struggle with the endless battle that every hero got to face.
Yeah, and it's I think the cool thing for me was that you get, in addition to his struggle, they give you a sense of, yeah, this, you know, like, because all these shows, a lot of them make you think as you're watching them, man, being a superhero or vigilante is so cool. And it is. But at the same time, we rarely get to see the fallout, the not only physical damage that it can cause, but also the emotional damage and stress. Like the beauty about Jefferson Pierce is that he's a human being, right? And in those flashback scenes where you see why he stopped and you see him, you know, in the bathtub with riddled with bullet holes, and he's, you know, in a tub of his own blood, and his wife is yelling at him and saying, you got to stop this and blah, 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 blah. And then the other flashback where his little girl at the time comes in and sees him sort of tending to his own wounds. And those were the catalysts of him stopping. And what I liked about that is that it's like, yes, the physical of being hurt or almost, mortally wounded, but also the emotional in the sense that that cost him his marriage. Being Black Lightning cost him his marriage. And I thought that was important to show, because it rarely goes that deep. I mean, you do get it on a show like Arrow and stuff, because he's another human being, but with zero powers. I mean, but when you have characters like, and I love these characters, and I love these shows, but with a character like Supergirl, or Flash, who has a healing factor and super speed, you sort of, their personal danger and their personal struggle is lessened a little bit, I think, because of their power set in some ways.
And I think it felt very very natural that, you know, the reason he gave up being a hero was for his family.
Yeah.
And it felt very natural to me that after all these years, the one thing that would be able to get him to suit back up again is to protect his family. Yeah.
You're right there. The other thing I want to sort of get your thoughts on is I think the flashbacks were cool. One thing I want to mention, I want to get your thoughts on before I move on from this, but what I liked about the flashbacks, did you guys notice the quasi black and white quality to them?
With the only color
being the red of his blood? I thought that was ingenious. What did you guys think of
that? That was a great way to tell the story too, that they were trying to tell from those flashbacks. That was amazing, the way it illustrated. It showed the blood and the damage a lot more, too, doing it that way.
And that's never been done on any of the shows, right,
Jordan? No, you're right there.
No, and we did actually, in the show we just talked about, though, Batman the Animated Series, they did black and white flashbacks.
I'm talking about the live-action DC shows now. Don't crush the streams. This is not Ghostbusters.
We just talked about that, so I thought it would be worth pointing out. But no, I don't think they've done it on any of the.
You see,
although,
folks,
hold up. Actually, Smallville had a quality to that it wasn't flashback exactly, but they did a black and white noir episode.
It's not the same. You just can't help bringing a Smallville
reference. So did my girlfriend's favorite show, Pretty Little Liars, but I don't bring that up.
Hey, but that's not DC, though, Travis.
I'm saying that noir episode of Smallville was on that caliber.
thank God you don't bring up Pretty Little Liars, because I would have hung up on you right immediately.
I agree that I did very much like that in Black Lightning, and I think we know that Greg Berlanti is very well versed in flashbacks, so I think that it's very likely that we see more of those going forward. And of course, they went through the time of making a flashback suit for Black Lightning. So I think that there's a good chance we see more flashbacks.
By the way, I love that. I mean, we'll get to it. Actually, you know what? I'll save that discussion. What I want to mention, and I want to get your thoughts on, is okay. So the flashbacks aside, the present day dynamic of the family, I thought, is great, because you see, when the fact that we get to spend time with Jefferson Pierce at his day job, which is being a principal, it further humanizes him. And what I mean by that is, I love Arrow, but Jefferson Pierce is not a billionaire. I love Supergirl, but Jefferson doesn't have Kryptonian powers. He doesn't have Speed Force powers. And let's be honest, you know, Flash, the way he got that job, you know, the way some of these superhero characters get their jobs is kind of, you know, convenient, in air quotes. But this guy has a real, like, it's a tangible, and this is not an insult to people in the teaching profession, it's a compliment. It's an average, you know, quote-unquote average Joe profession, whereas everybody can relate to that. I love Batman and Green Arrow, but I can't relate to being a billionaire. I wish I could, but I can't.
I think you speak for all of us there, Adam.
I wish I could get, you know, I wish I was bulletproof. I wish I could fly. I wish I could shoot lasers out of my eyes. I can't do any of that. But a day-to-day job, like, you know, something tangible, I think makes him a lot more relatable to the audience.
Especially showing how much he cares for the students and how well he is, well he liked he is at his job. And even
like you see him walking through the halls and like checking up on all the students and stuff. I really like that.
And he also brokered with the gangs as Jefferson Pierce, not as Black Lightning, as the principal, brokered with all the gangs to keep your violence outside of the school. This is a safe place. And they all agreed, but that was just him on his own. That wasn't Black Lightning.
Right.
That scene with Lala, where he was, that was such a tense scene. And I loved that scene.
You know what it is, too? Whenever you bring cruel treatment of a child into the mix, I mean, Lala was so easy to hate.
Yeah.
Just because of the way he was treating their child.
And it shows the patience of Jefferson Pierce, because he dealt with a few things in that episode that wanted to sit and laugh as Black Lightning, but he never. And that's why I would never be able to be a superhero, because the first scene, I was like, punch him, let alone Captain Lala. I was like, beat him down.
No, but you brought up a good point, Travis, is the fact that you saw, the graduation rate was up at his school. There was no crime incident at the school.
Well, up until this episode.
Yeah, before the episode. So you get a sense that as Jefferson Pierce, he's making positive changes.
Yeah.
He's having an effect without having to put on a costume. But the gang violence is so prevalent in his city that eventually it seeps back into the school, and then targets his family, which necessitates the need for Black Lightning. So as much good as he's doing outside the costume, there is still that need for the costume vigilante.
Quick dream over, but also to open yourself up now, we have flashbacks, like Jordan was saying. We have 9 years that he could tell us about what stuff, like before when he was Black Lightning, he had a lot of years to tell us about how he became Black Lightning, how he mastered his powers, each new ability that he learned. We don't have to learn it with him. Like we do with most of our heroes, we get to find out. Like we'll get little flashbacks of stuff. I'm assuming,
definitely. It seems like that's what.
Probably is. While his daughter is learning her powers, we'll probably get flashbacks of him learning about his powers.
He could relate. Spoilers, by the way. He could relate what his daughter's going through to what he went through. And the other cool thing that I liked was, the present day family dynamic, because him, his estranged wife, or they're separate. I would assume they're separated at this point. And his kids, they all felt like real people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He felt like a real hypocrite. Yeah.
Yeah, but they what I liked about his estranged wife was that, aside from the flashback scenes, she wasn't nagging, she wasn't needy, and she wasn't, quite frankly, bitching at him every 5 seconds. She was cooperative. She was a self-sufficient adult. And for the sake of raising their children, they cooperated. This, to me, was one of the best written, treated female leads in CW superhero history. Because the rest of them, while they feign independence, while they feign, strength on their own, and cooperation with their significant other and his exploits, they all fall back into the trap of, at some point along the way, my life is like this because of you, and then they get into the whiny. They always need saving. They get whiny and bitchy. And it's happened with every single one of the CW's supposed strong female leads. And I think it's synonymous with a problem that the CW has of writing female leads. I mean, I don't want to get Jordan off of us on a small
one. Watch yourself, Adam.
So I'll ignore Lana. But instead, look at Felicity. Laurel, but she was poorly written for so many other reasons. And she stopped becoming the female lead whenever they brought Felicity in. Look at Iris. Goddamn, Iris just pisses me off.
So, don't you dare say Sarah, sir. Don't you dare say Sarah.
No, I love Sarah. She's the only one. Okay. Look, okay. Sarah's the only one that, aside from Black Widow's wife. Oh, Black Widow. Yes, I'd like to see Black Widow's wife. No, I'm kidding. Black Lightning's wife that is competent. I love Sarah. Sarah, to me, is the best written overall female lead on these shows. But the most of them, you know, they fall into that CW melodrama trap. And so, and I think part of it is because we're dealing with adult actors in these roles. So it's not like, all due respect to the other leads, and they're great with what they're asked to do, but they're all, when they start, 20-something year olds that have to fit into the Abercrombie and Fitch model looking type. And so, you know, that's what you get. With this, you're getting, and the reason why they feel like real people is because they look and act like real people. I'm like, oh, look, here's another Calvin Klein model. Like, it actually, they actually feel like real people. And the cool thing was, the actress playing his teenage daughter is actually 19. The actress playing his college graduate daughter is about 28, 29. So they're playing the ages that their characters are. That, and all, as well as Jefferson and the ex-wife. That makes a big difference. It really does.
I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more.
So I liked it. The only thing that was a little bit contrived for me about the family dynamic was that the older daughter conveniently works at the school. It's like, it had a very Saved by the Bell kind of feel to it. You know how they all had the same class? In Saved by the Bell?
Yeah.
All the friends had the same class? This falls into that stuff where she conveniently works at the school. You know, that was the only thing that bugged me and that felt contrived. But otherwise, they all feel like real people. You know, the younger daughter was a little bit of a hothead who got herself into trouble, much like most teenagers. The other one had a better head on her shoulders because she's been through life experiences and graduated from college and stuff. So they acted respective to the ages they were playing, and they are the ages that they were playing. That makes a big difference for me.
I do like that it looks like a lot of it's going to take place at that high school, because it gives me a little bit of a Smallville vibe. Because, of course, that was the last CW DC show that we had that took place, well, at least the first four seasons, at a high school. And I love that aspect of Smallville. So yeah. I foresee a similar thing here.
Yeah, I mean, there is that. I have no problem with the high. I encourage the high school element. The only thing I ask is that it doesn't become a cliche of like make them like you did in the pilot, where everybody's feels like real people. That's what I'm saying. That's my big thing. The other thing that I thought about this show that I want to get you guys to touch on is, man, this show is ballsy in the way it deals with real life issues. I mean, in one episode, they cover racial profiling. They cover gang violence. They even cover gun violence in schools, which, you know, like, these are all things, okay, especially the racial profiling, you know, the police brutality. That's something that's been really, really prevalent in the last year. For sure. But, you know, unfortunately, we've been seeing pop up over and over again for quite a while, every so often, unfortunately, gun violence in schools. And usually when that happens, TV shows kind of shy away from showing that at all. This show...
That scene where Jefferson talked down the guy who brought... I can't remember what his character's name was, but the guy who brought a gun, that scene was so good.
No, but you see what I'm saying? How they went right for all three issues, and they showed them?
Yeah.
And they had no qualms about showing it. And what I think made those issues stronger is that... Or what brought them even more to the forefront is that they were happening to the main characters. Like... His youngest daughter is the one who gets arrested for being at that anti-bullying or that anti-gang rally, right? both of his daughters are held at gunpoint and kidnapped, right? And then Jefferson himself is pulled over because he fits the quote-unquote description of a robbery suspect. So I really commend them for actually dealing, because, you know, when you're dealing with, in this case, a person, when, you know, this is the first show that is dealing with a person of color at the forefront for DC. I know Luke Cage has done it as well and whatnot, but for, in terms of DC, you have to make it relevant and true to that community, you have to deal with issues they're facing. And I applaud the show for doing it, and the way they did it. And I think, Travis, you were saying that was the scene where you wanted Jefferson to punch the guy, was when they pulled him over, correct? Is that the one you were...
Every racial profiling scene that he was in, I wanted him to hit the guy because of how disgusted I am about that, which I enjoyed. Like you said, there's a really cool thing that the show was taking on, because most people wouldn't say anything about this, but let's just not say nothing and just move on. We don't want to lose any viewers,
right?
Because we might anger some viewer. But that's what I like about this show, is that it just goes for it right away. Like, I don't have a personal experience to relate to that, but I have friends that do, so I understand a little bit of the feeling of fear and feeling of not being heard like that when you're trying to interact with a person of authority.
Right.
So I love how they show that. And like you said, with him being a principal, it gives him a chance to have a lot of ground problems, have it real, which is something that we don't get a lot from all the other shows now. Like, I feel like we got Arrow, season one was a little pretty grounded, but after that, it started to go...
Yeah, once they brought open the door to the Flash,
yeah,
the grounded went out the window. But Jordan, what are your thoughts on the way they confronted the issues?
I thought that they did it really authentically, and they really handled it well. So I also commend them for tackling those issues and for really focusing on them.
And you know what was cool too is the fact that despite I mean, we mentioned it earlier, but despite showing, you know, the seriousness and the kind of darkness of these issues, frankly, the fact that these things are still happening is quite depressing. But in spite of all that, they managed to make Black Lightning and Jefferson Pierce still be a hopeful symbolic figure, in the sense that, you know, showing all the good he accomplished as a principal, and then once he suits up, just in one, you know, in the third act, he makes a big... he's already starting to influence change in a positive way. So I thought that they balanced it all very, very well. And look, I'm not going to criticize DC and the CW too much, because, and I want to get your guys' thoughts on this, they've had people of color on across all their shows, and they've been really good about exposure. I mean, if you look at it, we got John Diggle and Mr. Terrific on Arrow. We've got Iris West, Joe West, and Wally West on The Flash, right?
Yeah.
On Legends, Vixen, and half of Firestorm, Jax, right? On Supergirl, we have... They changed the race of Jimmy Olsen, and they have David Harewood as Martian Manhunter when he's not in full green mode. He is a person of color. So they've done a good job of visual representation on these shows before, but I think what differentiates Black Lightning and what makes it so special is that he's the star. He's at the forefront. His issues are at the forefront. The issues of his community are at the forefront. Whereas with the other shows, let's be honest, for the most part, all these characters that I mentioned, that it's great that they're being shown, serve as sidekicks to the titular hero. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. With the exception of Legends, since that's a team show, I would
say. Right. Yeah. Right. But the rest of them, they're all sort of side.
And Diggle for a few episodes this season because he was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, but don't get me wrong. They do get episodes and moments in episodes where they can shine. But they're often those are like side stories. The main story. I mean, yeah, sure. Diggle becomes Green Arrow for what, two episodes, three episodes, but. You, me, your mother, your sister, your second aunt, three times removed, knows that at some point Oliver Queen's going to go back to being Arrow, right? So it's different, and it's I think that having this hero and him be at the forefront of his own show and showing these issues the way they showed him is a big step forward for not only DC on TV. But superhero material in Hollywood and Hollywood in general. So I think they've got to be lauded for doing this, because look, and I got to say, I watched Luke Cage the whole first season, and the first half I thought it was great. The second half I think it went off the rails a bit, but I think Black Lightning did more in one episode in dealing with these tough issues. Then Black Lightning did in what, 13 episodes that it had?
Or sorry, I got to agree with you there, Adam. You're not wrong, because it did touch on it sometimes, but it did in Luke Cage. It didn't focus on it like greatly, like we did. It's the main storyline in this first episode of Black Lightning, which is awesome.
Right.
We haven't had this before, but I also say that CW deserves, and the DCCW deserves a bit of credit before this, because even, like you said, with the persons of color they have, they also have some people from the LGBT community.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Like, they go out, they don't care, they don't discriminate there, they hire the best people for the job that they think, which is, it's rare in Hollywood to see that. So, I'd like to think it's because they're stationed in Canada, and our Canadianness is rubbing off on them a little bit.
Maybe. That could be true. I'll second that. And Jordan overruled because you're the only American on the show right now. Let's talk about – we got to talk about the villains a little bit. I want to get your thought. I like the whole, the 100 gang as it was set up, and how Lala was – they played Lala as like a main. For the most part, he was the main. You could misconstrue that he was the main head honcho at the 100. And even if
because for this episode, he was pretty much the main villain, and then Tobias Whale was sort of in the background. So
right. Yeah. He heard that right away from him, though.
Yeah, even if he were the main guy, let's say, I think it would have worked, because. The scenes that we saw him in, like I said, the minute he mistreats that young boy, us as an audience are prone to hate him, right?
Yeah.
Just based on that alone. But the reveal of Tobias Whale
was awesome.
And the personal connection.
Yes. That was surprising to me, because I said it before that I think the majority of the time the best villains, there's exceptions, but I think for the majority of the time the best villains are ones that have very personal connections to the heroes they're fighting. It's why Deathstroke and Prometheus are the best villains on Arrow. And so here I think having that personal connection between Tobias and Jefferson, I think that's really going to make their dynamic and their adversarial relationship very, very interesting.
Agreed.
I couldn't agree more. And also, we're going to get flashbacks from them. Hopefully, we'll get a flashback of a main fight they had when he thought that Tobias was dead. I want to see that flashback to know what happened there. I'm dying to know about that.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Definitely.
And I'll say, when we see Tobias and he's feeding that guy to piranhas... I mean, that just really sets him up. Like, you're like, okay, yeah, you do not want to mess with this guy. And did anybody else think that was a nod to Mad Love, maybe?
Maybe, yeah.
I was thinking Prada's 3D.
But I'll also say about Tobias Whale that it's really cool to see him in live action. He's a character that I really came to love thanks to the Beware the Batman animated series, where he was one of the big villains on that show, and very underrated show, one that got canceled way too soon, but that was a great show. But he was awesome on there, so I came to love him there, and seeing him in live action here. And I believe that originally Tobias Church on Arrow was intended to be an adaptation of Tobias Whale. So we've sort of already seen one adaptation sort of the character in live action and on another DCCW show, but to see an actual Tobias Whale actually with that name on Black Lightning, it's pretty cool, and I really liked what we saw of I think his name is Krondon in the role.
And also, did anybody get the Kingpin from Daredevil vibe from Tobias Whale?
Yes,
That's what Sam Rizzo, he actually has a question about it that we'll get to in listener questions. But yeah, that's what he said. He really got a Kingpin vibe.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that. And I think that's great because Kingpin in the comics is a fascinating villain. And also in the Daredevil Netflix series.
Oh, I love it in Daredevil Netflix.
And by the way,
yeah.
By the
way, also, Tobias Whale was talking to Jordan when he was reeling Lala in. Because he was asking if he believed in the resurrection.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, you know, I'm going to send you to Tobias. Wow, yeah. I'm going to have Tobias welcome on this show, you know, a fictional character, and talk to you about that. About the resurrection, see what you think of it. But no, and by the way, I'll say it, and it might piss a lot of people off, but I really don't care. Daredevil is the best, quote-unquote, Marvel Cinematic Universe thing we've ever seen. I've said it.
Here's the thing, and I'll say, not to get off on a tangent, but I don't think it's fair to compare movies versus TV shows.
But hold on a second. I'm just going by Marvel's logic of it's all connected.
All connected, Adam, but it's still not. There's still two different mediums, so I don't think you can compare one to the other. I will say that I love Daredevil, though. I love their show, so I'm not going to completely disagree with you on that. It's just that I don't think that it's apple. I think it's apples to oranges. So I don't think that's fair to say.
I agree with Jordan on that too, that it's hard to compare TV to movies because, like with the Arrowverse, for example, we get over 200 hours of time with these characters. So we built these relationships in with them. But to Adam's point, we have spent a lot of time with the MCU.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Now we've spent a lot of time with the MCU. Right? So,
but how dare you, sir? Winter Soldier was
amazing
when that came out. It blew my mind.
That movie, I found so boring. I'm so sorry, guys. Movie so boring.
While the rest of us are watching a fantastic movie in Winter Soldier, you can go watch the trifecta of Thirst, Batman and Robin and Catwoman. How about that?
Well, I'll say that would be, to me, that would be more enjoyable.
Or as I like to call them, crap, diarrhea, and constipation.
That would be like my living. Oh my God, I can't imagine. You'd have to actually tie me to the chair to get through. Well, I wouldn't mind the first episode. I could.
Hey, Travis, that's what I'm talking about, Travis.
I said I could live with that. I'm not giving it
He didn't say he liked it. He said out of the three.
But compared to the three, it's the season finale of MASH or Seinfeld compared to the other two.
but no. So I definitely there's a lot of potential between Tobias and Black Lightning to see their animosity build up, and their eventual confrontation is going to be fascinating, I think.
I agree. I have a question for you guys.
Sure.
Because of this episode, did you guys catch the little drop on the news about there are other people in other communities that are called heroes?
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought that was a perfect way to leave a little door open that it could, if it's successful, it could connect with the universe somehow.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I already believed 100% that that's eventually going to happen, but this just further leads me to believe that, yeah, that's indeed where they're going.
Since you guys brought it up, here's the thing. One of the strengths of this show is that it's just Black Lightning and his confidant, mentor, and father figure, Gambi, right? I'm getting a little annoyed with the CWDC TV shows that, aside from Legends, because Legends is a team show by nature, that every friggin' hero has to have a Team Arrow, a Team Supergirl, a Team Flash. You know, it's like, especially, okay, Arrow I can understand because he's a human being. But at the same time, that team has gotten, forget about the last episode where they're quote-unquote fractured. Eventually, they're going to come back together. But that team has gotten so large, it's like a mini Justice League in and of itself. It's ridiculous. You know, but he's human, so I'll sort of leeway to that. But what the hell? I mean, the Flash.
Well, I sort of see it like the Bat family. Like they've all got their own.
But they don't know. But what I'm saying is, it doesn't. It's too friggin' formulaic now. And I'm sorry, but to me, the Flash being a speedster who can travel through time, who can manipulate this and that, the Speed Force, and who is a forensic scientist, so he's got the intelligence. Why he needs, you know, Cisco, Caitlin, he's got Wells, he's got you know, Wally, okay, because you got to do Kid Flash, I get that, but you know, Iris has no business being in the part of Team Flash, and I've gone over that ad nauseum.
But I love a lot of those characters. So
I'm saying here, Jordan, I think that some of them do have value, but I swear to God, if somebody else says we are Flash, I'm going to punch my
feet. Oh, you've got the same hang up that Adam does about that line?
Because it's stupid.
I just don't enjoy the line, but like I'm just, like they didn't need to say it on the last episode that aired. That was
Travis,
feel that. But I got to disagree with Adam in terms of Cisco is his tech guy.
Okay, no, like, hold on a second.
Same thing with Caitlin is his medical.
Okay,
so
Wait a minute, though. Can you at least agree with me that there are way too many people on each one of these teams?
Oh yeah, but that's the way it's gonna be. We want it both ways. We want to have a good titular hero, but we also want to see callback, Easter eggs. We want to see in season one of Arrow, never would I've ever thought that we would see Wild Dog and Mr. Terrific on the screen in an Arrow show.
But what I'm saying is there are ways to do those characters and have them be on a semi regular basis without having them to be in a bunker with him and being branded Team Arrow or Team
I think what would solve your problems, Adam, is if they changed Legends into a show kind of similar to Justice League Unlimited, where they send
out
four or five heroes or heroes slash anti-heroes each episode to in two-part episode to solve or to save something, Justice League. I feel like that would suck. Because you could eliminate the teams, you could have your shows focusing on your main heroes, and then the team people that you already got developed, you could have them on another show.
But I
That would be really cool.
But what I do love, it is a cool idea, but what I do love about Black Lightning is that it's just him and Gambi.
Eventually his daughters, I think, are going
to
be part of this team
too. But his daughters, because one of the spoilers is shown to be a metahuman, bringing his daughters into the fold, I'm fine with. But to me, it's just like, once you bring them in, leave it at that. I don't want this group escalating to be his ex-wife, the vice principal.
there's rumors, or at least people have speculated that maybe Static's gonna wind up. He's gonna wind up joining the show, and that he's gonna be mentored
that would be
by
awesome.
Black Lightning.
Okay, but again, you're still dealing with a maximum of five people.
Arrow only has six now on Team Arrow.
Where do you see six?
Six? Oliver, Diggle, Felicity, Dinah, Renee, and Curtis.
That's six.
That's all of Team Arrow right now.
Yeah, well, technically, it's only three of them right now.
Yeah, technically three because of last episode, but
my thing is, I like the three. I like the simpler dynamic. Now it's like it's constantly, like I said, it's become less of an Arrow show, a Green Arrow show, and it's more of a just the quote unquote grounded Justice League team.
I will agree with you to a certain extent, because this is something Travis and I were talking about before we started recording, was that I brought this up last episode, seeing Green Arrow back on his own fighting by himself was really refreshing, and to see it gave me a lot of season one vibes, seeing him just.
To me, it takes. To me, it takes away from the novelty of the title character, when you have four or five other heroes constantly every single friggin' episode by his side. To me, so.
But I think they do a good job of establishing a hierarchy on that show, though, of level of abilities for heroes. That's one thing I've enjoyed with Arrow going forward. I remember Roy started, and he used to get knocked down, like when they fought Captain Boomerang. Roy got knocked down, and you could tell, like, he and Oliver's still fighting with, and I think they progressed that well. Like, none of them can put a hand on Oliver, like, none of the team. So I think that they still kind of, like, when you bring Superman into Supergirl, it's a whole other can of worms.
Oh, God.
Because, like, you don't know, but, like, I enjoy Tyler Hoechlin's performance.
So do I.
I see more, but it's hard to put him in because he's equally powered. I think that Arrow does a good job of. With their team, there's nobody like you can think would be as
good. Well, that's Supergirl's problem with Martian Manhunter, because he is more powerful than Supergirl.
Oh yeah.
So here's my thing. I hope that even if they do cross over eventually, they keep it like a Supergirl thing, where it's an alternate universe, and it only happens once every year.
I don't want it. I'm hoping it's eventually on Earth. My number one choice would be for it to be on Earth One.
Same here, but I agree with Adam. I'd only want seeing Cross. Him and his kind of show, for the first couple of years anyway, you should spend the time flushing out your Black Lightning story. But if you do have a crossover where it's a big crisis, you should be able to go to his Earth and get him.
Keep it limited is my thing.
I was talking about this with Jasmine actually last night. And we were talking about, because she was like, Black Lightning sort of has a different goal than some of the other heroes, because he's really just trying to protect his community, right? And so what I was saying was, I could envision something. If you remember when Green Arrow got recruited in Justice League Unlimited, and he was like very hesitant. They were like trying to get him up in the Watchtower. He's like, I don't want to be up in the Watchtower looking down over people fighting aliens. I'm just looking out for the little guy. And he was like when they first tried to recruit him, he was like, I think stopping like a supermarket robbery or something like that. So I could see something like that with Black Lightning next year's crossover. There's an alien invasion or whatever it is, and they're like, we need your help with this. And Black Lightning's like, no, that's not my thing. I don't fight aliens. Yeah. And they're like, we really need your help, because now if these people attack, then everybody's gonna be dead. So we need your help. And he's like very reluctant about it, but he eventually, I could see something like that with him.
But I do want more of is, first of all, you know, I love the fact that Gambi is basically the Alfred to Black Lightning's Jefferson Pierce's Bruce Wayne. I love the fact that a couple things. The fact that in his tailor, in his clothing shop, right?
Mm-hmm.
His men's clothing shop. He had the wall that moves away, and then he's got an underground where he helps, you know, fashion a new costume.
Yeah.
It gave me so many, in a good way, Batman 66 vibe, because when the wall moves away, I'm like, okay, so that button is basically their Shakespeare head.
I'll say one main difference between Gambi and Alfred, though, I think, is that Gambi was trying to pressure Jefferson to become Black Lightning again.
Right.
Whereas I feel like Alfred is always he always wants Bruce not to be Batman.
Yeah, yeah, no, but there is a comparable there, is what I'm saying.
Definitely.
Two things about him owning a tailor shop. It reminded me a lot of the Kingsman movie and the Kingsman sequel, because that's where they operate out of. Like the tailor shop is a front for their spy organization. So I like that. It gave me that vibe to it. But also, the fact that he's a quote-unquote tailor makes sense that he'd have some concept of dealing with a costume of clothing, or, you know, of fabric and materials and stuff like that. So it kind of makes sense. And I hope that in flashbacks they deal and they expound upon the relationship between Jefferson and Gambi, for sure. I do want to touch on and get your thoughts on the costume and stuff, because first of all, I want to say that I like the fact that the show doesn't give you the how or why of the costume and how it works. But I do, in the first episode, I do hope that they pepper that in throughout the rest of the episodes this season as an explainer. The same goes for the full extent of his metahuman ability, how it came to be, and what exactly, like, to properly define it. I'm glad they didn't do it in the first episode, because I think it would have dragged it down or made them rush a couple of things. But I do hope it's developed over time.
Right? Sure.
And they show us these things. But
oh, agree.
Yeah. In terms of the costume itself, at first when I saw it in stills, I thought, okay, it looks cool, but it looks a little clunky and bulky at the same time. But I think it actually really works better in motion and on screen. I mean, first of all, it makes sense that it's more armored in nature because he's a human being with not too much in terms of regenerative.
So then why is Bale's suit a problem for you, Adam?
No, I just I think it looks too much like a SWAT outfit. That's my problem with it. There's a difference. If it looked more like, if it looked more Batman-y, I'd be fine with it. But had they kept the Batman Begins suit, it would have been great. But they went with this segmented, futuristic SWAT-looking shit. That is like, all right.
His second suit is better than the Begins suit.
I think you're full of crap.
I don't agree with Jordan there at all.
Thank you.
Begins was my favorite Batman movie.
Common sense.
What did you say? What did you say is your favorite Batman movie?
Begins.
Begins is.
Yeah. Just like me, as a Batman movie. Here. Okay, we'll get back to Black Lightning in a second. But I'll reiterate my stance on the Dark Knight trilogy. As a Batman movie, a pure Batman movie, Batman Begins is the best one. As an overall movie, The Dark Knight is the best movie. And The Dark Knight Rises, minus John Blake, is a solid end to the trilogy.
This is what I always say about the Dark Knight trilogy. I will not argue anyone on any order they put it in, because they're all so, so close to me. So I'm not going to argue either one of you on that. But for me, the order is Rises, number one, then The Dark Knight, then Begins.
Mine would be the opposite of that. To go Begins, Rises. Begins, Dark Knight, and then Rises.
Thank you. Yeah.
Although I can probably say that Rises was more of a Batman story than The Dark Knight. I found out it was more of a Joker and Harvey Dent story. But you can watch all three. It's just, well, after you go and watch don't watch the Nolan trilogy after you watch BVS, because the fighting will make Batman look you can't beat up two people at one time.
It's a different style in the Dark Knight trilogy, but it's still great.
Let me tell you something about the Dark Knight trilogy fighting sequences. I as a martial artist of 24 years, I can tell you that fight style is crap. And I know because I'm a martial artist of 24 years.
All I can say, Adam, is as somebody who doesn't have that background, it looks great. Like, to me, just from a personal standpoint, when I watch those movies, it looks awesome to me.
Me at the time, too, when I watched those movies, I'll agree. But like I said, the moment I seen the warehouse scene, I was like, yeah, that's the way Batman's supposed to do.
How does it look awesome? In the first film, you can barely see what he's doing.
I found in Begins, they didn't even use his fighting as much as his scare tactics and his fear. Come out of the shadows and grab people, which I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's what I love. That's what I love about, especially that dock scene. And this actually ties into Black Lightning, because what I was going to say about Black Lightning is the first scene where Black Lightning, or actually it's not even Black Lightning, it's Jefferson out of costume when he saves Jennifer. That reminded me so much of the doc scene from
Batman Begins. Same here, Jordan. Same feeling here.
Yeah, Yeah, where you can't see him and you just see the lightning flashes. I was like, oh, that's awesome.
I think that thing lights up on purpose as a distraction method, because think of it, it's so dark and you can't see, and then all of a sudden you're thrown off because you see that, and then
he gets
another upper hand.
That's a good point. But going to wrap up about Begins though, that fight scene at the docks in Begins, I love it because it's shot from the criminal's point of view.
No, I love the so, scare. Yeah, I love the scare tactics, no question about it. I thought the fighting was too tight. The best, I'll tell you right out, the best fight scene in the Dark Knight trilogy is the one where he's in prison, and he's battling those however many guys, seven or eight, whatever it is.
My favorite fight in the Dark Knight trilogy is the rooftop fight with Catwoman, because for me that was a dream come true seeing them fight alongside each other.
You know the whole Catwoman Batman team up, but
yeah, yes, but I mean that for me that was a dream come true seeing them fight alongside each other in live action because.
But when he saves John, not really Robin Blake, in that scene, it's so poorly choreographed. And it just, if you watch it more than once, it looks terrible. And that's editing that's inexcusable. So, and I'm somebody that loves the Dark Knight trilogy. But back to Black Lightning.
I could talk about the Dark Knight trilogy for...
And we will eventually, but not
now. Yeah, for hours and hours and hours.
But I agree with you about the Batman Begins comparisons to the dock scene and that hotel, that motel complex fight.
The motel one, that fight scene, here's what I'll say about it. It was awesome, but my one complaint is that I much preferred the music they used during that in the first look trailer than the music they actually used in the episode. But the scene, the moment in that, well, maybe my favorite line in this whole pilot was, is that your car? It was nice. And then he just throws him on top of it. I was like, oh, that is so badass.
My complaint about that whole scene is at the end, when the cops are still there, they had a picture of you as chase him if you see him, vigilante, if he ever comes back. Why? You're really close. You're like 10 to 15 feet away from the cops there. I think you should have just got out of there and ran rather than just watch it. But that's just a little quip. That's just a little quip.
But we all agree that the costume does look better in motion than it does necessarily in stills. Correct?
Oh, I agree with you.
I mean, I loved it. I loved it in that first still we got, but I mean, I loved it in motion too. So.
And then the other thing I wanted to mention was the fighting, the fight choreography itself. It reminded me a lot of Arrow, in that it was very grounded. Aside from his superpower of manipulating the electricity and stuff, the fighting itself, the technique is very grounded.
I can agree with that.
Give me a slow clap on that one, Adam.
Yeah.
Travis and I were just talking about how awesome James Bamford's his fight choreography is in Arrow, and like we were talking about last night's episode in particular before we started recording, and I definitely get a similar vibe from Black Lightning for sure.
Yeah, it's all one shot pan to the camera when he's doing the moves. It's great.
Yeah. So overall, like I said, I think my biggest takeaway from that is that. We got a tease of him in the costume in the past from that video footage about the old guy that said he saved my life and now I got to see my grandkids and all that. We got, you know, the video footage of him in like 8 or 9 years ago, whenever it was. That was cool. But the fact that we had to wait for it until the third act and then everything that led up to it. The superhero moment and the fight scene felt very earned in the way that they by making us wait so long for it, I think. Let's put a bow on this and sort of give a rating. Travis, what do you what's your grade of this episode?
Oh, I'm going to go out of 5, I guess, and give it 5 lightning bolts out of 5. It passed, it passed Arrow as the best pilot out of DCCW for me.
All right, cool.
Hold up, because I got to ask, Are you counting Smallville as part
yes,
of that?
Yes, Jordan, I'm counting Smallville. It's third or fourth for me. Arrow was one, but now it's two. Black Lightning's one.
Okay.
Smallville is last and down eight.
I can't get on board with that, but
that doesn't matter. That's his opinion, and he's entitled.
I know. But you know, I had to ask.
We'll do our top three rating of DC related pilots in recent memory as well. So
that's a good
go
idea.
Ahead, Jordan. Give your rating, and then do your ranking of your top three.
I would give this pilot an A. And I would, it's not going to be in my top three. So I would say number three, Supergirl, number two, Arrow, and number one, Smallville. And are we counting, hold up, are we just counting CW DC shows?
Oh, you can throw Smallville in. Well, that's you can throw.
Well, no, that was WB. That was WB technically.
Yes, I know, because you want to throw in Gotham. I know that.
I was curious whether Gotham counted. Is it
in your top three?
But yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's actually probably four. So no, it's not. So.
So you brought that up for nothing. All right, good.
Because I was thinking about whether. Well, I was pondering whether it would be my top three, but okay. I think it's actually four. So.
All right, good. My rating, and I'll this time I'll skew with Jordan's rating system, and I'll say it's an A plus for me. Top three pilots. In third place would be Arrow. Second place, I'll give it to Smallville because I love the Superman mythology. And in first place, it's got to be Black Lightning. And I will go so far as to say that I wrote a written review on Revenge of the Fans that you can read the full 9 yards of it over there. But what I said in my closing was that, to me, the CWDC television, as great as they are, now Arrow maybe not as much in the first couple seasons, but now, along with the rest of them, have a similar tone to the MCU, in terms of it's very popcorn fun, more on the fluffy side of things. I'd compare the CWDC universe as a whole to the first Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man, like in tone-wise. So if the other DC CW shows are Ant-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy level, then I would say that Black Lightning is the Batman Begins and the Dark Knight of DC TV.
Are you just talking about the Arrowverse?
I'm including Gotham in that as well.
Okay. I see where you come.
Here's why. Gotham goes off the rails into, they over.
It's campy. There's parts of it that are campy.
Yeah, they overdo the camp at some points too. So.
But I will say early Arrow was very much inspired by the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yes,
so
that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is once they've embraced this whole, all right, we're bringing in, the Legends, and we're bringing in the Flash, and we're bringing in, all these other metas, then by nature it has to change because you're dealing with superpowers, right? So,
but I'll still give it to Arrow, though, because Arrow at the beginning had no superpowers, whereas Black Lightning is still superpowers.
Right.
So.
Right, but they're very minimal. And I felt the themes that Black Lightning deals with are far more hard-hitting than anything any of the DC shows have dealt with.
Yeah, you're right there. It's the most relatable.
If you look at the Dark Knight, they're talking about, They go deep into fear. Rises is an allegory for the state of the government was, and the government control and cover ups and all that shit. So all that's in there as well. So the Dark Knight trilogy went into much deeper with its themes than what the MCU and so that's the point I'm trying to get across.
Oh yeah, you're
when I make that comparison.
I definitely see where you're coming from.
Same here.
So that's our take on Black Lightning. It's off to a great start, and I can't wait to see more. And I know you guys are in the same boat as I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have questions, don't we?
Yes, we do. I believe we have two listener questions. I'm going to check to see if we've gotten any more since then. But first up, a question from Joseph Golden, who also I want to thank because he wrote us a review. So once we get to the reviews right after this, we'll be reading. He gave us a great review, so I really appreciate that, Joseph Golden. He says, what are your favorite moments from the DCEU? And yes, Adam, he said DCEU because that's what it's called, Adam. And or DCTV thus far. And what is the weirdest DC material that you guys have ever read and or seen? I love your show. Keep up the great work. Well, thank you, Joseph, and we will do our best to do so.
Thank you, Joseph. I try my best, even though, to quote Wonder Woman, when talking about Jordan, I'm working with sugar. I'm kidding. Jordan's awesome.
Hey, well, thanks, Adam.
All right, what's let's give our guest the go ahead on this one. Favorite DC films moment and DC TV moment.
Oh, geez, that's putting me on the spot here.
One of each.
Okay, well, for DCEU, as I told you guys before we started recording, maybe even while we were recording, BVS is my favorite movie. Okay. So I'm going to have to go with the warehouse fight scene where Batman's the Save Martha scene.
Yes.
Where Batman moves like...
And Travis, weapon. I have one question.
What?
Why did you say that name?
This is after that, so he forgets about that.
All right.
It's just the way Batman should move, like sure. Coming up from ground, throwing stuff on the guys' machine guns and neutralizing them. He's so brutal in the way he fights, especially in the Ultimate Cut, which is what I consider is the movie.
It's the only cut, in my opinion, yeah.
Just the way he moves, it's so graceful, it's so elegant, it's so fast, it's not, there's no forcing it, there's no going against, it's all rhythm in movement, it's like poetry in motion. So that was my favorite scene, especially the Dark Knight Returns nod in the end where he comes through the wall and grabs Buddy and shoots the gun to destroy Buddy. It was perfect.
When I saw that in the theater first time and he goes through the wall and I was like, oh my god, is he gonna say it? Like I was about to scream. I was like, is he gonna say it? Like, you know the line, the I believe you line.
I believe. And then
he said it and I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, and in the DCTV, I'm going to have to go with, I want to say this year's crossover because I really enjoyed it, but I'm going to go with the crossover that featured Vandal Savage because that was the first time that I thought that they hit it out of the park. I always enjoy the Flash and Arrow's relationship in the DCCW. I think that has grown and like it's really cool. I love to see the playful banter between them when they're up against something and they just make a couple quick quips, but Flash still knows that he got to learn from Arrow. So I've enjoyed that. And I thought that it came to a head at the crossover with Vandal Savage in the second season of Flash and the fourth season of Arrow, probably the best fourth season of Arrow episode as there's not that many.
Jordan, what are your thoughts?
Okay, so we're just answering the first question, basically, that he asked.
Oh, no, sorry. My mistake. Sorry.
Well, it's fine. We can do it that way and then rotate back around.
Let's go back to Travis. Travis, what is the – actually, you know what? Let's do it Jordan's way.
Okay, I mean, it doesn't matter to me.
All right, we can do it Jordan's way.
We'll do it your way.
Okay. All right, well, I would say my favorite DCEU moment is Superman's first flight in Man of Steel. I think that is one of the most visually stunning, most moving scenes I've ever seen in any movie. Hearing Jor-El's dialogue about, about the world rising behind Superman and all that, just completely beautiful. The Hans Zimmer score, just Superman learning to fly and just embracing his powers and a beautiful, beautiful scene. So that's my, hands down, my favorite DCEU moment so far. And my favorite DCTV moment this far, he didn't specify Arrowverse.
Oh, for God's sakes, here we go.
if
you mention the Smallville pilot, I'm going to come through the computer and slap you.
You're actually going to be surprised, Adam. It's not a Smallville moment.
Okay, then go ahead.
And it's really, really close for me because I wanted to pick a Smallville moment, which would be, and I, you know what, because it's an honor, I'll give it an honorable mention because it's really close. It's the Smallville moment in the episode Calling where Lana and Clark kiss for the first time and she brings him a cake for his birthday. So I love that scene, and it was something I've been waiting for so long, but it's not number one for me. My number one moment is actually from Gotham, and it's a Batcat moment, and I think it's one of the Batcat moments, best Batcat moments. Obviously, it's the best one in Gotham, but one of the best in live action, period. And it's where Bruce and basically Selina and Bruce are talking at Wayne Manor, and basically it was right after Bruce had, like, duped Silver, basically, and he Selina asks, she's like, what did you tell her? And he's like, I told her that I feel such a strong connection to her that I've never felt with anyone else, and that I care about her more than anything, and that it's a feeling that I'd never want to change. That's not verbatim, obviously, but that's basically what he said to Selina, and Selena's like, and he's like, the best, he says to Selina, like you told me, the best liars always tell the truth. And Selina goes, that was true. And Bruce goes, yes, but not about her. And Selina she is completely stunned there. And I freaking love it. And then she's like, oh, okay, I'm just going to go steal your car now and go back to the city. And then she, right before she goes out the window to leave Wayne Manor, she says to Bruce, it's good that you're changing, but don't change too much. And then she goes out the window. I'm like, that's such a sweet moment. I freaking love it. One of the best Batcat moments ever. And I really, it's really Bruce basically confessing his feelings to Selina and telling her how much she means to him. And I think that is just such a powerful, powerful moment between the two of them. My OTP. So I can't beat that.
All right. I will say favorite DC films moment, because that's what I call it.
You see, but then if you call it DC films, and that counts Superman and the Mole Men.
I'm counting the new DC films, not 1978, not 2005.
It's new. Then if you just say new DC films, then that counts Scooby Doo and Batman the Brave and the Bold.
Oh, shut up and let me talk. How about that? here's what I'll say. It's I've got a tie. I'm sorry if that disappoints you, but I've got a tie because both made me cry happy tears. I kind of look like Matthew McConaughey in Interstellar watching these two scenes. And that is what Jordan said, Superman's first flight in Man of Steel, and the No Man's Land scene from Wonder Woman. The scenes themselves, the dialogue, either the voiceover or the dialogue preceding it, and the scores for both of those moments are just so iconic and powerful that I have to go with those two. In terms of DC TV, I'm going to have to go with this year's crossover, the Crisis on Earth X.
Again, that's a good choice.
Powerful storytelling with really deep themes, but also the superheroic action extravaganza that you expect.
You guys both brought up specific episodes. Was there a moment within either of those episodes, the crossover you mentioned, Travis, or the crossover you mentioned, Adam, that were particularly the best moment for you from that said crossover?
I'll let you go first, Adam.
You know what it was? That opening fight where they're all in the church and they're all fighting.
Oh, yeah.
Just the fact, and then the end fight, of course. But that opening fight, it showed you just how much they were able to do. Like, it felt movie quality to me.
Yeah. And that's why I keep saying that you could do, that's why I keep saying the Arrowverse keeps showing that you can do amazing stuff now on a TV budget. And that, it should show the movie people that they can, they don't need exorbitant budgets to pull off amazing superhero stuff.
There's no question that DC Films has a budgeting issue.
I think Shazam might change that.
I hope so.
But for me, it would probably be in the episode when they face, I want to say, Hawkman together.
Yeah.
They work together, like,
Albert's fighting him first, and Barry comes, but Hawkman takes it up there, and then he shoots the cable arrow to help him land. Then Barry uses his arms to generate wind to get his wings open, then Albert shoots it, so it's a complete work together. But what was best for me was at the end, Barry uses his new ability of throwing lightning, and Oliver just goes like, that's new. And I think forever, Oliver is the kind of guy that we know from the show, very Batman-y, that he definitely took that, put it in the back of his mind, and was like, okay, that's another ability I gotta remember just in case he goes off being evil.
Yeah. All right, so weirdest DC material?
All right, Travis, go ahead.
I'm afraid to say this.
No, say it. Go ahead.
Probably, Jordan, I'm completely sorry, buddy, but Catwoman.
Hey, well, I'll give it to you in that it is weird. I'm not going to deny
like the basketball
that.
Scene is what puts it over the top for me, being weird. Like, that is, I don't understand how that, like, reflects her abilities. Like, you could show a lot other options, but yeah, I was expecting something else because I was expecting what we got from Wonder Woman now, like, because it was Halle Berry the hyper powers. So I thought that they would figure out a way to tell, like, you get a successful movie out of it, but yeah. No.
Oh my goodness.
All right, Jordan, now I'm dying to hear this one.
Okay, well, if I'm going to go for something like an entire product, I would say probably Batman Returns, actually, because as much as I love it, that movie is crazy. I mean, it's a weird movie, and it's really bizarre, and some of the changes they make with certain characters, as much as I love them, they are weird, and I'll never deny that. So if it's one thing, I would say Batman Returns, but if it's one moment, I would say the rap song from Ben McKenzie's episode of Gotham that he wrote. You remember that?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, I would say if I had to pick something, it would be that rap, and they did it multiple times too in that episode. Or actually another thing from Gotham, that guy Anubis, that guy who walked around like a dog on the ground.
Oh yeah, that was some weird shit. Yeah.
That was weird. So I would say one of those two things.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, for me, it's got, I got it with, if I have any self-respecting fibers in my being, I have to give it to Catwoman. I mean, that was just so, it is just so ridiculous. Like, I'm at a loss for words to describe how sitting in the theater, I'm watching and thinking, why? And that was the only recurring question that I keep asking myself. Why? And then at the end of it all, I said, well, thank God I didn't pay for this shit. And so, Catwoman. There's a reason why I won a Razzie. And then
Okay, I've got another nomination for the weirdest DC moment would be the Sweet Tooth episode from the New Adventures of Batman.
Yeah, sure, I can see that.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's just one of those episodes where I'm like, how on earth does this even? How on earth is this even a thing?
Yeah, that was kind of crazy.
Season 4
it's
of it.
It's called A Sweet Joke on Gotham City.
Oh, yeah. That by the way, Travis mentioned season 4 of Arrow. That's another good one. Good call on that one.
But here's the thing. Are we talking... The question was weird. And so that's why I'm thinking of stuff that's like really... Like, and again, I'm somebody who defends season 4 of Arrow, but at the same time, is it really, I don't know if it belongs to me in a category of something that's weird, like that you look at and I was like, man, that's just bizarre. You know, well,
I just found that it went tonally different from every other season of Arrow, and
yeah,
I thought
the tonal shift is because of Flash.
Okay.
I thought it was because of the success of season one of Flash, because I think we'll all agree that right now there's no other. The highest apex was season one of Flash in terms of viewers and popularity for the DCCW show.
I would say the shining moments are a combination of Flash season one and Green Arrow and Arrow season two.
Yeah, but I'm just talking in terms of general audience popularity.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that there was a directive from the people above to the Arrow producers and people who showrunners of Arrow to make it more like The Flash after the first season of The Flash and third season of Arrow. I thought that they realized probably halfway through the season, this is not a smart idea. We should be more grounded. And in doing that, I think they jumped the gun and killed Laurel to try to get back to that grounded feeling.
Yeah.
That's just where I think that all went off the rails, and it got right back on rails in season five.
That's a really interesting take on what could have happened with that season. That's actually I never thought about it that way, but that's a good.
I just feel that Flash has been the most popular of all of them. Black Lightning could change that, like we talked about. But for right now, I think that season one of the Flash, like you got all those videos of Kevin Smith watching the finale crying.
Yeah, but let's be honest, he cries at just about everything.
Oh yeah, I love him, but he really doesn't mind sitting here. He's so positive about everything, which I enjoy.
Yeah. All right, what's the next?
All right. Well, that's it from Joseph. But we also got a question from our buddy Sam.
Yes.
He says, and this is something I alluded to earlier because I brought up this question that he asked. Well, one question he asked was, what is DC Daily Drop? But Travis, you gave him a good explanation for what that is on Facebook, so I'll omit that question. He says, Black Lightning was very Batman-ish. What do you think the show has to do to distinguish itself from falling into that? The main villain reminded me of the Kingpin from Daredevil.
I think that he should get away from the Batman feel would be to develop the two daughters more. And have them and their struggles and their abilities and what they're going through, have that in the show a lot, and I think you'll get out of the Batman feel pretty quickly.
Jordan, what do you think?
There were some similarities to Batman, like the I brought it up, the dock scene in Batman Begins, the scene at the club in Black Lightning was very reminiscent of the dock scene from Batman Begins. And sort of in terms of the tone of the show, he's a very street level hero like Batman, and I think that there's some similarities there. But overall, I didn't think the show felt like it was aping Batman in any way, really. So
yeah, Arrow feels more so like that than.
Yeah, I was just going answering in terms of his question. I didn't get the Batman feel from anything besides the scene that was similar to the docks and Begins.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Arrow,
for
the first three seasons, aped the Dark Knight trilogy like no tomorrow.
Oh my God, they still do. They did it in the fifth season a lot. Like when they diggled, they just stole the way that Batman.
And those were the best three seasons, in my opinion.
Oh yeah.
So I guess for Black Lightning though, I wouldn't say for me. I'd just be like, keep doing what you're doing now, and I think they're good. So
yeah, that's pretty much. I'm in agreement with you there, Jordan.
Yeah. Cool. So, for me. The only real similarities are the dog scene, with the hotel room, you know, the hotel.
You felt that the motel room scene was, or the motel scene was like the doc scene? I was referring to the scene at the club that felt like the doc.
That's what I was saying.
Oh, no, that, but I meant that, but the fight style of the, of like being more grounded is very Batman-y in general.
Oh, okay.
So there's that, and Gambit being his prototype Alfred.
Oh, yeah, that's right, too. I guess that's a good point,
but
too.
But aside from that, I mean, all it has to do is keep dealing with the particular themes that Black Lightning is dealing with, and that will differentiate it from any other DC hero.
And I'll say, Batman's my favorite character, so for something to feel similar. I mean, I don't want something that ate Batman, but for something to feel similar to Batman, I mean, that's cool. I don't see that as a bad thing either.
If you're going to borrow from, you know, arguably your most money-making popular character, I don't see a problem with that. But I think, like I said, I think the subject matter, the material, the themes will cause Black Lightning to differentiate itself without having to go out of its way to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't agree more.
So yeah, I guess that's it for questions. I want to thank everybody who sent in a question for this episode, and now we've just got some iTunes reviews.
Sure.
To read. We got our first two iTunes reviews in a very short span of time, so that's exciting.
Awesome.
I am pulling them up now. Let's see. I always have so much trouble finding these on iTunes. I always forget where I clicked the last time to be able to.
I can never really see our iTunes feed for whatever reason.
Oh, really?
I have trouble finding it.
Huh. Okay, here, I found it. Let's take a look. Okay, so the first one is from our buddy Justin, who was just on. By the time this episode comes out, he will have been on two episodes prior, or the episode that came out 2 weeks prior to this episode. Here's what he says. The review is titled A Multitude of Musings. It's a 5-star review from Jay Rocca. And it says, Adam and Jordan love DC Comics and their multitudes of media associated with them. I love the theme here, Justin. It's good to hear their different viewpoints and opinions on the vast history and future of DC's offerings. If you are a fan of DC and all its TV, movies, and comics, check this show out. Thank you very much, Justin. Really appreciate that.
That's an awesome review. Thanks a lot. And, of course, thanks for coming on. I hope to have him on again soon, but that's a nice compliment coming from him.
Absolutely. And then our other review that we got is from somebody who just left us a question. As I said, Joseph Golden, and it says the title is a great DC Comics podcast, and it's also a 5-star review. This podcast is one of the most engaging and great DC Comics podcasts out there. Adam and Jordan have great chemistry with each other and both offer really smart opinions about what is going on in the comics, television shows, and films. I would put this podcast up there with Holy Batcast, the entire Suicide Squadcast Network, DC On Screen, and the Just League Universe podcast as an essential DC podcast must listen. That is very high praise. Those are very, very high praise to be put in the category with those guys.
Yeah,
so
that's putting us in the Elite League. We're like in the All-Star game. So.
Yeah, I really
deliver on his. We got to make sure we deliver on that,
on that quality. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Thank you, Joseph.
And there's more. There's more. Sorry. Yes. I wanted to comment on that because I really appreciate that comment in particular. But yeah, he's got two more sentences.
Oh, good.
Overall, this is a fun podcast to listen to, and it always stays positive. Well, we try to.
Yeah, there's only so much positivity I can do with Jordan's, you know, sometimes.
Keep up all the great work on the podcast. Well, thank you so much, Joseph, and thank you for the question today. Questions, actually, I should say. They were part of one tweet, but it was two questions, so we appreciate that.
Yeah, no,
he was right on the money, too, guys. Like, I couldn't agree more with his breakdown. This podcast is a must-listen to anyone that's a fan of DC.
Thank you, Travis. We appreciate that.
That means a lot. First of all, Joseph, thank you for that. And really, that is a really glowing praise, and of course, Travis, you've always been very vocal in support for us, and we thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Anyone doing positive things for DC and putting their own time and effort in to do give something for free to us fans, man, I don't know how you couldn't be positive about that.
it's very humbling to hear such nice words from people. It's good. And,
for sure.
And you know, at the end of the day, even if we do, you know, if our opinions ever skew negative, it's only because we're so passionate about this stuff, because we love these characters. That's why, to me, like I said, I will always you know, I'm never going to get too upset when they announce a particular director or a screenwriter if it's, you know, let's say their credits don't necessarily scream to match up with a certain character, because at the end of the day, it's, to me, the character and how they're handled is what's most important. So you're never going to hear me scream about, you know, the two directors that just got hired for The Flash, because, hey, let me see what they... Let me see their take, and as long as The Flash is treated in a positive way, I'm happy. But I may scream if they announce tomorrow that, you know, Matt Reeves is replaced by Joel Schumacher. I may get upset, but I have a basic...
Or if that... Lindsay Lohan's cast as Batman.
See, I'll give you a spoiler. I mean, you'll already hear this, but I'll reiterate it again for anybody that is worried about that. And look, all due respect to Lindsay Lohan. I hope that she gets her life back on track, and I hope she prospers and stays healthy and whatnot. But whatever your opinion on the DC films' recent slate and movies are, one thing I think we can guarantee is that they strive to get actors that are very high caliber. Top-notch talent to associate with these roles, right? Right? Is that right, Travis? Would you agree with that assessment?
Oh my God! Every supporting cast are grossly overqualified.
Yeah, Jordan already knows that he agrees with me because we touched on this already.
Yeah.
So by that statement alone, that DC goes for the top quality, highest, top-notch actors and actresses, that automatically excludes and disqualifies Lindsay Lohan. Just on that level alone, from being Batgirl. So right then and there, you know, it's nothing to worry about. So that's what I'll say. That's what I'll say, you know, in that respect. But if we ever get heated or upset or anything of that nature, it's not because we want to be. It's because something is being done to the characters that we care about so much that's making us angry. Otherwise, look, to me, the more movies that are made, great. The more television that's made, great. And so even if it's something that's not for me, like Teen Titans Go to the Movies, I'm happy it exists because the kids out there will get something DC related to enjoy. So that's our stance, and we're glad that you enjoy the positivity, and we will continue to strive to stay positive, and hopefully, you know, the more news that's coming out, if it stays as positive as it is now, then we won't have any reason to get upset. So let's keep that ball rolling.
Alrighty.
But I think that brings our episode to a close. Travis, thanks a lot for coming on, man. I hope this is the first of multiple appearances for you in the future. We hope you had fun.
I had a fantastic time. This has been great. Like, I always love chatting DC or any superhero genre, usually with people, but you guys are two of the best.
Hey, well, thanks, man. We really appreciate it. And it was great to have you on.
Yeah, and I had to bring him on, not because he talks well about us on social media, but also because, you know, as you mentioned off the top of the show, he is a fan of we have the same hockey team in common.
We bleed blue and white is the correct
term. We're not Cree, so that's not why we bleed blue and white. It's because we love the Toronto Maple Leafs. So just by that basis alone, I had to bring him on. And
and Cleveland Brown fans, if you think you know suffering, you have no idea.
Exactly. but it was fun, and we've already sort of I had initial conversations about bringing him back for one of these DC animated movies that we're going to go back and talk about. So we'll do that as well. And I'm sure and he's also part of our roundtable Justice League that we haven't had a chance to record with yet, but we will be doing that in the near future, we hope. So
I'm looking forward to any and all appearances on here. And also, as Jordan said, I think it was before the podcast, I'm a
DCCW correspondent, we'll say, for the DC Daily Drop podcast that drops every day. A little short 8 to 10 minute thing with Tom and Zach. They just break down any news that you get every day for DC, and I just drop there every Friday. It comes out on Sunday, and it just recaps the week that was in DC.
And remember that we are part of the Batman Podcast Network that was put together by Batman on Film. And if you go over there, not only will you find us, but you'll find Holy Batcast and other awesome Batman podcasts. So check those guys out. And thanks to
including DC Daily Drop.
Yes. And so thanks to Bill from Batman on Film for putting that together and having us on there. Let's do some social media plugs. Travis, if people want to get in touch with you on social media, how do they do that?
You can find me on Twitter at Travis_156. You can drop me a line and we can chat DC anytime or any superhero genre. Like I said before, I like them all. That's about it. I have a Facebook too, but just fire me off a Twitter message and we can get to that Facebook stuff if you guys need to communicate that way.
Jordan, where can people interact with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, I want to plug, because I was just a guest last night, actually, but it'll be a little while once this episode comes out. But as of this recording last night, on Arrow Fans React, which is Cammy and Ray's YouTube show, where she recaps Arrow with other Arrow fans after every new episode. So I was on there with her and actually Jasmine Alexander, who also has been a guest on Multiverse Music before. So I was on with the two of them talking about last night's winter premiere of Arrow. So if you want to check that out, that is available on YouTube.
And by the way, Cammy, I just want to mention, is also a part of our roundtable of Justice Leaguers on this show. She is our resident Wonder Woman. So
yep.
Send me a link to that, Jordan, would you? Because I'm really curious. I'd love to listen to that.
Sure. Thanks. Yeah.
By the way, Cammy, where's my invite? I want to come and argue about. Well, not argue, but I want to come on, and you can convince me all the reasons why I should love Felicity. So, where's my invite, Jordan? If you talk to her, tell her I'm expecting an invite.
You tell her that this cat is a big fan of Felicity.
You are?
Oh yeah, I've enjoyed. Sometimes I don't like the writing that they do for Felicity, but I enjoy the character.
I'm glad this didn't come up before.
Hey, well, she's gonna be on the Justice League roundtable with you as well. So, you guys might be defending Felicity against Adam.
No, but I want to go on her home turf in enemy territory and talk about Felicity. So tell her to set it up. I'll be on there anytime she wants.
and then you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanV on both.
Right. And if you want to converse with me about DC, hell, I'll even answer questions about Marvel. Or even better, if you want to talk about the Leafs, you can find me at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter.
Alrighty.
And that puts our show to an end. We hope all the listeners out there enjoyed it. Before we go, because I forgot to do this at the top, Travis, I'm going to ask you, because you said you wanted to be asked, give us your favorite live-action Batman and your favorite live-action Superman.
Oh, okay.
I didn't expect
this to happen. I forgot about it.
You said you wanted to add, yeah. So.
I know, I forgot. I'm going to go with my favorite live-action Batman as good old Batflick.
All right.
Thought he was amazing. He nailed the old, weary Batman. Mm-hmm. And for Superman, that's a tough one. Tom Welling did put in a lot of hours, but sorry. Got to go with Henry Cavill as my Superman.
All right, my man. That's it, baby. That's how we do it. That's how we roll.
I'll redeem myself from the Felicity.
Yeah, I'll give you a pass for that. Yeah.
Wait, you could have gotten even more in my good graces by saying Tom Welling.
Nobody cares nobody cares about being in your good graces.
No.
When you get put into Arkham Asylum, we can't help you out, you know.
I'm just kidding. Travis is already in my good graces, but
his performance was the best in that episode where he was convinced that he never had powers and made it up. He was in a mental institution.
That episode is amazing. Yeah.
So I'll give him the credit there.
Yes.
All right. Maybe Travis can be one of our other Smallville correspondents when we do the Smallville retrospective. How about that, Jordan?
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. I'd love to have him back for that. And before we get off the subject, though, that episode, though, is one of my favorites. I was just making a list actually of my top 20 Smallville episodes, and that one's on there. It's very high actually. I think I ranked it at a 10.
Don't spoil it. Save it, man. You have no concept of
Well, we're not planning. We're not planning on ranking our top 20 episodes on this show. So
that could have been something we done.
Well, I'm not. I don't just save stuff so we can do it on a later episode.
He's only giving us a little taste. He's only giving us a little taste.
If we bring something up, I'm gonna talk about it. I'm not gonna save it to eat later.
You would never be a good journalist in bearing the lead and saving the lead.
But yeah, Labyrinth, that episode's so amazing to me because it's completely plausible. Like, it makes you think, what if that was true, though? What if it was true that Clark had just made up? Because it completely seems like when the doctor starts telling him, oh, you made up this whole fantasy because your biological parents died and you made up this fantasy that you were the savior of Earth, and the whole thing of him stepping out in front of Lex's car and that he didn't actually have superpowers, though. He was the one who made Lex go off the bridge and all that stuff, and that Krypton was made up and that the name Kal-El was made up. I mean, that episode is so fascinating from a psychological level, and I freaking love it. So amen to that, Travis.
Yeah, it is probably my favorite Smallville, one of them anyway. But that was the only thing we had for so long, Adam. It was crazy. It's not like now. Like, I remember seeing the pilot. This will make Jordan not so happy, but I remember seeing the pilot for Arrow. And the moment Oliver snapped the guy's neck and then snapped another guy's neck to keep a secret in the pilot, I was like, damn, that's not this Smallville stuff I'm used to.
I mean, so. That doesn't make me mad. It is a very different show than Smallville, but this is something I was having a conversation with Jasmine last night, trying to convince her that we wouldn't, because she's never watched Smallville, and I was trying to convince her that we wouldn't have any of what we have today without Smallville.
Oh, 100% agree about that.
Yeah, yeah.
That blazed the trail.
Yes.
So Jasmine, if you're listening, I have two other people backing me up on that now.
and Cammy, if you're listening, I want to be on your show. Bring me on.
But also, Jasmine, give us a good idea of what not to do in some cases going forward. So, a lot of lessons learned from that. Great show.
I don't know if I can back you up on that.
All right,
but
that's enough. We'll wrap up Jordan's crazy talk for today before he gets on another Smallville rant. Folks, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Until next time, have a great week, a great weekend. So long, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Go Leafs, go.
Exactly. Go Leafs, go.